sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. Masters Sunday. Adam Hoge loves golf, but he's apparently you just love me more. Admit it. You love me more than you love your great game of golf.
I was sitting around this morning and I was like, I think this is the fifth or sixth year I've done a radio show on Masters Sunday.
Because you don't have to actually pay attention. We could have we
what
got
What am
it,
I doing?
We got it on the TV here. You don't need to hear anything. It's just it's all mental minutiae.
What?
I don't know what that means. It's just so boring. Look at it. Oh, look at the white ball rolling on the green with the manicured perfection of the blue. What do they call it? The bented grass, the blue, the Bermuda.
Bluegrass?
It has a name, right? Doesn't have a special name. The grass at the Masters, the grass on all the great golf courses across this country.
All right, I'm not that weird. I'm not like paying attention to what grass everything is. Sir, all I know is it's just a great day to sit around and watch golf.
You legit look very upset you're here right now.
No, it's. I'm more disappointed in myself. Just like planning out my life. We've been talking. Next Sunday is Easter. It's my birthday. I think my wife and I have been talking about that day for like 3 months now. Hey, you're gonna work that day? I don't know. It depends on the Blackhawk schedule, which is still not out and it should be. And then I'm sitting around. Why wouldn't I take Masters Sunday off?
As a pre-birthday birthday.
Screw my birthday. I don't care about it. I'll work on my birthday. Well, you I don't can, care about that.
Well, you can, first of all, work for you is just an incredible opportunity to spend time with me. And
yeah,
we'll have a cake.
I do enjoy my Sundays with you, Carm.
Dan Long and I were already talking about what we were going to do about your birthday. Weren't we, Dan Long? We had an extensive conversation about what we were going to do.
Dan still doesn't know it's my birthday.
We had an extensive conversation, did we not, Dan Long, today about what we were going to do for Adam Hoge's birthday? Didn't we do that?
It was the entire day is planned out, so I think you have to come in now.
Yeah, okay.
When is your birthday? Next Sunday?
Next Sunday.
It's
Easter, though, too.
Okay, well, we'll have some eggs and we'll have some cake. We'll do a lot next
eggs
Sunday.
Eggs and cake.
Eggs and cake. Hey, Sergio Garcia is in the lead at the Masters. He's 8 under. He's never won a major in his career. 70-plus starts. It's the big story today. Spieth, no major ever, and he's 8 under. He's through 5 holes, 2 under on the day, and I'm officially rooting for the collapse. That's what I'm going to be rooting for. We need entertainment.
That's just mean.
Don't we want a good collapse here?
No.
You want him to just cruise to the finish? Don't you want to see a Justin Rose at 5 under or a Paul Casey or Ricky Fowler's 4 under?
I'm sure I'm missing some golfer when I say this, but Sergio Garcia has had like the most brutal career. And by the way, he's living a nice life with plenty of money and all that. I understand that.
Great.
But this dude has been so close so many times in major championships. He finished 4th in the Masters in 2004, 3rd in the U.S. Open in 2005, 2nd twice in the British Open, 2007, 2014, and also tied for 2nd twice in the PGA Championship, 1999. 2008. He's 37 years old. This guy has had so many collapses, so many tough, brutal losses, has really never played all that well at the Masters except for that 1 year in 2004. I am all about Team Sergio today. I do not want to see a collapse. I want to see him win.
The parallels to Sergio would be what? Didn't Payne Stewart have trouble getting over the finish line? Didn't a Phil Mickelson struggle forever to get over the Masters finish line?
Yep.
You can see, I know my golf. I didn't even prepare for that, and it just came off the top of my head. That's the type of level that I bring to this show, Hoge.
Yeah, you started by saying golf is boring.
It is.
It's not boring. It's relaxing.
Meditation is relaxing. I don't watch meditation.
You don't think laying on your couch watching baseball is relaxing?
No, I do, and I admit that baseball. I love baseball, but baseball is boring unless it really matters and your team is in it.
Okay, fine. If you're gonna go like literal,
I mean, listen.
The first 3 days and maybe the front nine of Sunday, I guess you could put in the category of boring compared to like football. usually the back nine of the Masters and the other other majors are pretty entertaining.
312-981-7200. Are you entertained by golf? By the way, we're paying attention to everything going on today. The Cubs just went up 7-3 on an RBI single from Jason Hayward.
Who's crushing it.
Who ripped a triple earlier today, who ripped a ball to the gap that Ryan Braun made an incredible diving catch. And I would personally like to apologize.
There it is.
Yes, no problem.
I didn't even need to ask for it.
No, it's overdue. 1 week overdue. I said the guy would hit 179 with one RBI this month.
That's, you did say that.
I was dead wrong. And he still hadn't hit the ball hard until today. And Zach Davies, who's been pitching for the Brewers, does not look like a major league pitcher. But now we're into their bullpen. He's still getting hits. So Jason Hayward, congratulations. He worked his butt off in the offseason. I don't know if this is going to last, but it's been an incredible first week for him. So I apologize.
A great first week for him.
Yes, it's been a great first
week. And a significant development. Because the Cubs won the World Series in spite of Jason Hayward's offense. In spite of Jason Hayward's offense last year. And if you get him involved this year on a more consistent basis throughout the season offensively,
helps.
You're fine. I mean, plus you're adding Schwarber, who you didn't have last year. I mean, I think the Cubs are so far away the best team in baseball.
Okay. I mean, they're not perfect right now.
They're not. Okay.
We got some bullpen figuring out to do. We've got
That lineup.
The lineup is
and
impressive.
There's a lot of decent lineups. The Cubs are, there's a huge gap between them and everyone else on that second tier.
It's part two of the three-peat. I do believe that, but I also think I think there will be a bunch of moves. I don't know about a bunch, but I anticipate
Jose Quintana.
I think the Cubs will have a major addition at some point this year.
I would love that trade.
Maybe it can happen. I don't think it will. Neither does anyone else. Hey, weeknights, WGN TV Evening News has added another hour at 6. Mark Sapelsa, Micah Mater, Tom Skilling. Dan Rohn will be there on WGN TV Evening News at 6 weeknights. Okay, so there's a guy at the Masters who's living out his dream.
He's living my dream.
Okay, we're going to talk about that coming back because you actually could do what he's doing. So it's an emotional Masters ESPN trying to get you to cry story, and I kind of want to just
cry,
make fun of it. 720 WGN. People don't realize how hard this job is. Yesterday, in your afternoon, I left here at 4:30. Half-hour show, power show. I think it's the best show I've ever done.
Really?
Yeah, I think I should
be. Were you solo?
I was solo. I think I should be. Please don't be listening management right now, but I think I should be a 30-minute guy.
Just go 30?
For 30, I'm great. After 30, it's over. But for 30 minutes.
So you got 11 minutes left.
Yeah, 11 minutes. Then you're done. I mean, when I left, the Hawks game was starting against the Kings, right? They ended up losing in overtime. That was kind of painful, even though it didn't matter. You had the Bulls game going on against Brooklyn, which was a huge disappointment. You had the Cubs playing Milwaukee last night, and you had the White Sox in the afternoon yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, we want to be informed.
And you didn't mention the Masters.
And the Masters. Now, we want to be informed radio hosts. We have to watch all this stuff for you. This is not easy.
I had two TVs going at home, and I was home alone with a sick kid. And you still have to have a life too, like real life. This isn't. I'm not complaining, by the way, at all.
No, I am. It's very difficult.
You're complaining?
Can I get sympathy? 312-981-7200. This is very difficult. You have to watch a lot of sporting events to do this gig. It's tough. Like I gotta make decisions. I only have one TV. I'm not Steve Cochran. I'm not Rokan. I don't have the apt package of love. Is there such a thing?
The apt package of love. Like you got to get the biggest reason I go DirecTV over Comcast is that they have the wireless boxes.
Yeah. How does that help you?
Because I, on days like yesterday, I take the small TV I have in my office and I just move it downstairs and I put it next to my regular TV.
Okay, so
just so I can have two monitors. It's not permanently there. It's not like I have some crazy setup in the basement with like seven TVs, which some people do. Congratulations for that.
I like that you're technologically talented enough to be able to pull that off. That's impressive to me.
Well, the best place to take that is outside on the deck.
Yeah, I don't have an outside.
That's beautiful.
I do have a deck, actually. I do have an outside deck.
Yeah, see? You got to get the DirecTV, the wireless box. You can bring it anywhere.
I'm so bad with my outside deck that I've just bequeathed it to my next door condo neighbor. Here you go. Yeah, you can have mine too.
You just gave him your deck?
Pretty much. Like I don't have any chairs. I don't have a grill. Like, yeah, you could put your stuff there. I don't care.
God.
Just let me sit there occasionally. Yeah, sure. Put your laundry all over there. I really don't care.
Really?
It's all true story. Yes, absolutely.
I think my deck is my most important part of my entire house.
If I sat out on the deck, what do? I would look out at the trees in Lincoln Square.
No, you put a nice little chair out there. You get the TV going. You have a beer and you just relax and you watch golf on Sunday. How does that sound?
Not that great. Hey, by the way, in my neighborhood yesterday, I go to Hubs, which is a burger, chicken, whatever place. They have everything.
I thought you were going to Hub Arkish's house.
No,
just
I didn't
to
go,
watch.
I didn't go to Hub. I didn't go to Hub Arkish's.
Watch the Cubs
or Arthur Arkish's or any of the Arkish's. No, that didn't happen. But I did go to Hubs, and at primetime_47, Dion Rubino comes up to me as I'm in line for my food. It's like, hey, are you Mark Harmon? And he introduced himself. It was like the highlight of my life, honestly. Thank you, Dion, for coming up and saying hello. Honestly, if you ever see me anywhere and you see you like hate me and you want to punch me in the face, I'll still take it as a compliment.
Just the fact that they know who you are.
Is Hubs the place with the mural from the Saturday Night Live I Like the Juice sketch?
I didn't notice that that's in there. It could be. It's on Lincoln, about like 5700 North Lincoln, roughly.
Okay. Yeah.
That's one of them. There's a
I
bunch
think that's
of them.
The place, yeah.
There's a couple. There's another one, I think, on Tui somewhere.
By the way, Sergio just bogeyed number seven.
Yes.
So you started to get your collapse. We'll continue to keep you updated on the Masters.
He's 7 under. Is that what we got?
7 under. He's 1 shot ahead of Rose. Ricky Fowler's 1 over on the day. So he is 3 shots back. And Jordan Spieth, who a lot of people were thinking was just going to continue making a run today, he's actually 1 over on the day, too. So he's only 2 under on the tournament, which puts him 5 strokes back at this point.
Okay, so speaking of Spieth, we'll keep you up to date on the Masters. I'm not rooting for Sergio to lose. I just want drama. Like, let it go down. Like, let's get some. That's when I get into it. Hole 16, everyone's tied. That's a great Sunday.
You're rooting for it not to be boring.
Right. Yeah. Full drama, full collapse, something.
Okay, so last year, as we were doing the show on Masters Sunday,
yeah,
and Jordan Spieth hit the ball in the water twice on number 12,
mm-hmm,
you were probably, I don't remember, but I'm assuming you were, yes!
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't.
That's
It's not
nice.
Well, I don't think that, you know, Jordan, I mean, I'm sitting here in Chicago.
I think he's offended by it.
He's in Augusta, Georgia. I think it's okay. But, okay, so you mentioned Jordan Spieth to pay off our tease if you've been listening this long. Jordan Spieth's caddy, his name is Michael Greller. Okay, Michael Greller was a sixth grade teacher and big golf guy. There was a junior tournament and he ends up being Spieth's caddy as a junior. And he had gone to some other junior tournaments where basically to get him to that point, like he went to some junior tournament, some guy didn't have a caddy. He offered to do it for the round for free. He did that. That guy told another guy, hey, this guy's great. And that guy told another guy, this guy's great. And then he got to Jordan Spieth. So he was Spieth's caddy for a junior tournament. Spieth, I forget what he did in the tournament. Tournament's over. This guy goes back to be a sixth grade teacher. Spieth goes on to be a professional golfer. But they have a bond. And he looks at his wife one day. He's like, look. Or I think she said to him, actually, like, how are you going to feel if this guy is going to turn out to be the next Tiger Woods and you're going to be teaching sixth grade? Nothing wrong with that. But you could have been between the ropes. Is that what they call it? At the Masters.
Yep.
Okay. So he's like, you know what? I got to follow my dream. And so Michael Greller is at the Masters today caddying for Jordan Spieth. And I'm thinking about, like, because I love following dreams, right? Like, this is part dream for me. I'm sure it is for you too, right? A little bit, kind of, sort of?
Absolutely.
Right. And, you know, and then the professional athletes, like, that's like ultimate dream. Like, if I could do anything in life, I'd be a professional athlete. And I wanted to be like an NBA ref just to be out there. But to be a caddy and, like, you got to, I don't know, you got to polish his 5-iron and give it back to him and put the putter and you're like...
Are you anti-caddy?
I don't think I could do it. Like, I really don't think I could do it.
You don't think you could do it from a, like, you wouldn't be good at it enough, or you just don't want to?
Oh, I'd be terrible at it, for one, but, like...
You're just saying, like, you don't even think you'd want to do it.
I don't think I'd want to do it. Like, I caddied one time when I was in high school, and I, like, all these pompous people no chance. Rake the sand, no way. And listen, I've ended at the ballparks, lugging around hot dogs, whatever. It's not like I'm above, but, like, to actually just, like, cater to someone like that, it's different. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think my bigger problem with doing it on a daily basis, just as a sort of a side job, would just be the, you know, you got to walk 18 holes and lug. I don't really care about the catering part. It just seems like a lot of work.
Right, you're carrying the bag.
But
it's a heavy bag. Like, they've got big leather.
Let me finish that. A lot of work for not a whole lot of reward. Like, where are you going with that, right?
I mean, is that even a legitimate dream?
But
I guess it is.
You're talking about something different. To caddy for Jordan Spieth? Think about how much money that would make you.
Yeah, he's making
There's plenty of reward there. That's a career.
312-981-7200 is the phone number, by the way. Is that
if, like, Jordan Spieth offered me tomorrow to say, hey, leave your job at WGN and come caddy for me.
Right.
Done. I'm out.
Seriously, you would do it?
Absolutely.
I mean, you'd make, I don't know what your salary is, but I think you'd make about 10 times what you make here.
Maybe more than that. I don't know. I don't even know how it works. Like, I don't know how much a caddy makes. Does he make, like, a percentage of the winnings?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, like, well, so, Jordan Spieth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on. Zach's a former caddy calling in. What's up, Zach? Thanks for giving your input here from an expert. What's up, man?
Hey, I caddied from the age of 12 to 22. It was my first job, and it was one of the easiest, greatest jobs I've ever had.
So when you're sitting there with Mortimer and Randolph from Trading Places, if we can go old school reference, and they're saying, can you please, I don't know what they want you to do, but some menial task. How do you handle it, Zach? How do you say, you know what, this is great?
Well, the money is all cash under the table, and you get great tips. So, I mean, you can't really beat that.
What's the going rate for the tip? Like at the end of 18.
Well, the golf course I worked at, I'm not going to say the name, but we were paid $65 per bag, and I would normally carry two bags, 18 holes, and then tipping anywhere from $30 a person to over $100, depending on the person.
Wow.
So you're at 130 plus, let's just say you go low end 230s. You're like, let's just call it a minimum 200 for a loop, right? It's called a loop, right,
for
Zach?
A loop for maybe about 5 hours, give or take some.
Right. See, I just felt like I had a better deal going on. I'd go to the ballpark, I'd make a couple $100, 2 hours, done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're outside. I mean, the golfers, if you get nice golfers, they're mainly out there with friends drinking some beer, so... They're not too uptight, but there's some golfers that can drive you crazy.
Yeah, I bet, Zach. Well, it sounds like you were doing good job. And that's the other side. I appreciate the phone call, Zach. The other side of this that I want to talk about is, have you ever had a caddy golfing?
No. I could never. I see that.
That's the other thing. I've only had one time. It was at Conway Farms a couple years ago when they had the media out before the BMW Championship to, like, test drive the course in the middle of the summer.
That's an incredible perk right there. That's real nice.
It was nice. The course crushed me. I was not – should never be on that course ever again. I totally embarrassed myself. But that on that course, you're required to have a caddy. It's required. And I actually was this is kind of awkward, man. Like, I don't.
What do you think? Can I get a?
I don't.
You got no shot,
like,
buddy.
I'm not good. This guy's gonna think I'm terrible. But you know what? I had a really nice dude caddying for me, and he does it like this is what he does. So he knows every inside and out of the course.
Right.
They would go down, like, if we were waiting on the tee box, they would hustle down, like. To help locate your ball.
Go down there in the woods. That's where it's going, pal.
But they could see it better. So they would they would find, like, every time you lose a ball, they'd find it. Right. Like, oh, my God, this is great. Like, I think I was terrible. I think I lost one ball the whole round because this guy was, like, pulling out of the weeds every single time.
There's a certain skill that people have with that stuff. Like, I'm one of my buddies, Simon, who I play with and haven't played with him for 5 years, but he always knew exactly where the ball was. It's right there to the left of that tree, about 5 feet to the left. It should be right there for you. I'm like, how did you follow that ball? I mean, if I'm by myself, I lose minimum 10 balls a round. That's well,
yeah, it depends on the course, but yeah.
If it's a course that has water and it's a decent course, I'm
the worst is the tall grass. Well, goes too. In there, bye.
It's over.
See? Although you can usually find like 10 balls too.
All right. Well, here, we'll keep you up to date on that. Michael Greller, the caddy for Jordan Spieth.
I'll take his job tomorrow.
They did a 1 hour. Okay, it wasn't an hour. They did a half hour. It wasn't a half hour. They did a 15-minute portrait on Michael Greller. I've never seen anything like it. I was borderline crying / laughing all at the same time. It was incredible.
Quick correction. I lied. Sergio Garcia did not bogey.
You just told everybody that Garcia bogeyed. People drove into a tree.
I think the graphic on the TV was wrong. Because then I looked up and he made par. So he still 8-under.
331, still 8-under. No collapse happening.
Chalmerson winds the puck around at the left wing side. Richard Panik's got in there over the Predator line in front of the net. Turns and fires. He scores! Outstanding play by Richard Panik. And he went from forehand to backhand, rolled around, and flipped it in behind Mazanich. And it's 3-0 Hawks. Duanisimov, top of the right circle. The whole side of the net walks in front. Shoots. He scores! Richard Panik was right there with a loose puck. And in behind Mazanek. Mazanek's headed for the bench. He's back in the Predator net. Kane into the Predator's on the left circle. Panik and Freddie. She just scores! Hat trick for Richard Panik. The first of his career. It's 5-3 Hawks.
That was October the 15th at the United Center. The Blackhawks beating the Nashville Predators, who they will play in round one. We're still awaiting official schedule, whatnot. If you go to the United Center box office and see what they're scheduling, it actually does say that the Hawks are playing Thursday night, which sounds correct to me, but also Friday night, which doesn't sound correct to me, but I don't know why they would have that there. And then the next game at home, game five, would be the following Friday night. I probably shouldn't be saying that on the radio, but that's what I feel like I have to be honest to our listeners. I did see that.
Well, Thursday sounds right because the Bulls play Wednesday.
Right.
It's not going to be before that.
Right.
So it's kind of been the day we all thought the series would start. It's rare to go back-to-back in the playoffs, although it does happen if the scheduling is messed up. And I think there's a concert in Nashville at some point, too, that's in the way.
Okay. So it's possible the Blackhawks will be going back-to-back. How difficult is that to do? A guy who won a cup perhaps would know that. A guy who is now turning into a radio superstar. A guy who is on the phone line right now. Brent Sopel joining us right now. What's up, Soapy? How are you, brother?
My mentor, Carmen. I'm too busy. Are the Hawks playing? I'm worried about the Bulls. What's going on?
Wait a minute. If he's your mentor, you're in trouble.
He is in trouble. I believe Brent is too. We're great. The Bulls had a tough loss yesterday, Brent, I believe, as you know, which that was the highlight after after hosting with Sopel. The next day I get a text, and I don't know the number, and it's a comment on the Bulls, like, good start to the game. Like, who is this? It's like, it's Sopel, you jerk. But, like, you you were talking Bulls basketball, which was a beautiful thing, and then yesterday lost to the Nets, which was nauseating. So, okay, what do you think of this matchup, Brent? Hawks have been Nashville 4 out of 5 times this year. You got to feel good about that. And every time you guys have won, or not every time, but whenever they play Nashville in the playoffs, the Hawks go on to win the cup, so there's that, too.
Yeah, you know, let's keep that streak alive. Let's make that one 3-for-3. So, you know, it's a good matchup. You know, Nashville's deep. You know, they scored by committee. They had 12 guys that scored over 10 goals. You know, the Blackhawks only had 7. It's going to be really count on their defense. You know, their defense, top 4 defense, and had 150 points for Nashville. So, this series, it's really going to be more on the defensive end of things. It's going to be, you know, defense by committee, meaning that, you know, these defensemen, their top 4, PK, Subban, Roman Josi, who, in my mind, is going to be one of, you know, is going to win a Norris Trophy here really soon. You know, Ellis, these guys jump into play every single time. And no matter what line's out there, the first line, you know, Kane's line, Panarin, or, you know, fourth line, whoever that is, you have to realize who's on the ice at all times, because they're going in. They want to make, you know, a 4-man attack at all times. So you got to be real smart with a puck. You know, if you're changing, put it into a corner where they got to go back for it. You know, turnovers are going to be key. You know, they get that puck, they turn it up, you know, up ice. You know, you got some guys, Phil Forsberg, John Kirk. You got some really quick guys that like to get up the ice and, you know, put the puck in the back of the net and try and get that nauseating country music going on when they score in Nashville.
Can't, can't believe you just dug country music, Sopel. I mean, that's not nice. You're a Canadian and all, but you can't appreciate a little country?
I grew up on the old twangy on the tractor. I just can't do it. Just unless she's really, really good looking and going to go with me, then I can you know, suck it up. But otherwise, no.
I'm just looking forward to how they try to keep all the Blackhawks fans out of Nashville this year, like, because that worked so well last time.
Yeah, just like same thing in Tampa when Tampa tried to do it when we won that year too. You know, it's, you know, I don't mind. I love the fact that, you know, Blackhawks fans travel that good, and you know, who doesn't want to travel up to Nash Vegas and have a great time? You know, the more that they try and do that, that means, you know, we're in their head as fans, as teams, instead of focusing at task at hand. And, you know, you're going to hear guys talk about, you know, we just need to worry about ourselves. And that's right. The Blackhawks just need to worry about themselves. But you've got Nashville, you've got the you know, front office, the GM, everybody worrying about fans, this, that, and that. And that plays great into everybody's hands, you know, because then, you know, we're going to be asking those players in Nashville, what do you think about this? What do you think? Then they're thinking about it too. So it plays right into the hands of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, I think there are some teams that the Hawks have managed to kind of get in their heads that way in the last 6 or 7 years. And I think Nashville's one of those teams. Brent Sopel, I'm with us right now on the beat. Okay, so it's the playoffs. So that means we always talk about that big M word, momentum. Do you think, I want to know from a former player, the Hawks clinched this thing with 4 games to go in terms of having the top seed, and then they lost 4 straight games. Really doesn't matter at all, except for the fact that, okay, it's been a while, and I do think it's fair to say that they geared down a little bit in those 4 games. And then, you know, again, I don't know how much yesterday matters, but to blow that lead in the third period, it just didn't leave a great feeling going into the playoffs. Do you think that has any impact, or does it just, whenever this series starts this week, you start over and you get in the playoff gear?
Well, you know, there's 2 parts to that. If we weren't talking about, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks and how spoiled we are winning 3 Stanley Cups, they've been there, you know, that many times where I'm not concerned about that. Now, you take a look around the league where other teams that haven't been there, you know, I've said for years and years, you know, last year, I picked Pittsburgh to win the cup because the way they're playing going in, but they didn't have the experience. Blackhawks have that experience where they understand where they are. They understand the situation. You know, obviously, Duncan Keith, Brent Seaver, Kincaid, they got rested in Anaheim. They weren't going 100%. There's no question. Rested. Jarmelson was taking care of his wife, having the baby. They were resting people. They didn't have their full lineup because they know exactly what to do, how to do it. They've been there, done that type of scenario. Now you take a look at like a team like Nashville, who hasn't been there. They've got nobody that's been there like the Hawks, that experience. So that experience is going to come into factor time and time again. And you add up the Stanley Cups, the games that these guys have played in the playoffs, it doesn't compare to anybody else in the playoffs, and that's huge.
Hawk fans, going back, remember playing Nashville and seeing Shea Weber out there, but then he was traded for P.K. Subban, who had 10 goals and 30 assists on the year. This is a dynamic player here. How are they different than in the past? Like, if for the diehard out there, but who hasn't been paying attention, what will the Predators look like that they haven't seen in the past?
You know, I touched on it a little bit earlier. They're a lot deeper. You know, when you can send, 12 guys that have 10 goals, you know, when you dress only 18, you dress 18 skaters, to, you know, and 12 of them, you know, have scored, over 10 goals. So you're going to see a lot of depth, you know, a lot of speed. You know, it's a little bit different. You go back to the Barry Trotz, the kind of the boring hockey, but you're going to see the same goaltender. You're going to see P.K. Subban, Yorman Yossi with a lot of speed. They want to go. They want to take that puck, turn it over, and go the other way. A lot different than, in the years past, where they kind of like the more of a defensive style. So, you know, you could see a really up-tempo, you know, back-and-forth type of hockey with, 2 great goaltenders, Pekka Rinne, who is a monster, 6'6", covers, every inch of the net. You got to get him moving, laterally, side to side, and then go upstairs with the puck. And then obviously you got Corey Crawford, who's, on the verge of putting a stamp on his career, where he could really start talking about, Hall of Fame if they get it done this year.
Hey, Sobel, I'm wondering what you feel about the playoff format. Has it been 5 or 6 years now that they've been doing it this way with it, you know, trying to create early divisional matchups? Now it doesn't matter for the Hawks. I mean, they do get a divisional opponent here, but because they had the one seed, it could have been Calgary too. I'm just curious, as a former player, how you feel about it, because I kind of have mixed feelings. Like last year, that felt like that first round series against St. Louis felt like it could have been the conference finals.
Well, yeah, no. Here's the thing, there's never going to find a formula that's going to be perfect every single year. Now let's just use, you know, college football for an example. We've been uproaring for years to get a playoff. Now we need more than four teams. Should we go to 8? Should we go to 16? Now this year you got the Metropolitan Division, who was the best division, who you're going to have Pittsburgh and Columbus face off each other, and they both, you know, had almost 110 points. So people are upset at the first round matchup. You know what? At the end of the day, those 82 games are out the door. You know, like you said, it could have been a conference final last year, Blackhawks and St. Louis. There's really going to be no good format. This is 8 great teams in the West, 8 great teams in the East. Anybody could win. You go back to L.A. when they won their first one. They snuck in, like, the second last game in the 8th spot, and they ran the table and winning the Stanley Cup. So no matter who you play, however they schedule it, you know, one year is going to be different than the other. At the end of the day, it's going to be a grueling 16 games to win, however you get it done. So I'm fine with it. You know, you take a look, again, Nashville, there's been some great series, you know, in the past, you know, past with them. You go, you know, St. Louis and Minnesota, that's going to be, you know, be a great series. Like you said, could have been Calgary, which would have been a little bit different, but, you know, how do you make something exactly perfect year after year? You don't.
Yeah, Pittsburgh and Columbus, that would have been the 2 and 3 seeds if they just did a traditional 1 through 8.
Right, that's so, a great series.
That's a first-round matchup there. So I guess I can see why, you know, especially like Columbus, they've had such a good upstart season, and they kind of have to draw the Penguins in the first round. That's tough for them. You know, to me, though, rivalries just happen organically. To have the league try to force this, it feels forced. That's what it feels like. You know, Vancouver isn't anywhere close to Chicago, and yet that turned into maybe the best rivalry the Blackhawks have had during this run.
That's awesome.
Because of those playoff series. They were just so much fun. It got interesting with the Kings, too, a few years back. If it happens naturally, just let it happen.
No, I couldn't agree more. You know, absolutely. And it doesn't matter how many times you played each other in the regular series and how much time you hate each other. At the end of the day, if you don't have, you know, some playoff series and some playoff history, that's when that blood is bad. Like you said, the Vancouver Canucks, some of those series that we had against them, and, you know, St. Louis, you know, that's when you really get those rivalries. And, you know, you talked about Pittsburgh and Columbus. You know, the last time Columbus, you know, made the playoffs, they played Pittsburgh, and that was just an amazing series. You know, went back and forth. So now they have that history. So, like, I agree with you. Just let it play out. However it goes, whatever it goes, you just want those teams to make the big market teams that can make the playoffs year after year, so that you can have these rivalries and really make some noise and really watch some great hockey.
Brent Sobel, Stanley Cup champion, Chicago Blackhawk, the Hawks getting ready for their opening round series with Nashville, 109 points, which is the second most all-time, which means that there's no doubt that if you're second all-time, that means this is another Stanley Cup. Before you go, Brent, I want to ask you a question that's not about the Blackhawks. This week, the NHL came out and said that we're not going to participate in the Olympics in 2018. So I'm not a huge fan of Olympic hockey, but the Olympics are in South Korea. You have huge exposure. You can send across your best players. They all want to play. Alex Ovechkin's like saying he's going regardless. I don't see the win here for the National Hockey League to not be in the Olympics. I know you have to stop your season, but these guys want to go, and it's a huge stage. What do you think?
Well, you know, first off, Carmen, I got to ask a question. I'm thinking of making my comeback next year just so I should make the Olympics. You think I should try it?
Absolutely. Support that 100%.
You know, so it'd be guys like myself that you would see playing. At the end of the day, it's money. It comes down to dollars. you know, the IOC is not willing to offer up something that it's never offered up to the NHL. And the players, you know, NHLPA, they're not willing to, you know, give up what these bargaining rights, you know, for that next CBA. So Gary Bettman, you know, he's a business guy. He only cares about the NHL. There's no friendship between the NHLPA and the NHL. That doesn't exist. It's not that way. As a player, of course you want to go. You want to represent your country, and anytime you can put that jersey on, no matter if you're Russian, you're American, you're Canadian, you're Czech, whatever jersey you slide on, that's your home country. Of course you want to play, but it comes down to dollars and cents. The IOC is not willing to give up more and something that they've never given up before, and the NHL is not willing to cough up extra dollars. They want to make money, and unfortunately, it comes down to dollars and cents.
You know that Ryan Dempster did pitch in the World Baseball Classic. I mean, are you serious? Could you maybe make a run at the Olympics here? Because we'll do everything we can. Carman and Hogue will lead the Brent Sopel charge.
You'll lead the Brent Sopel charge. Yeah, you know, I had a conversation with my dad a couple days about it, and you know, contemplating about absolutely if I should make the comeback and see if I can make that Olympic team.
That's awesome.
That'd be amazing.
Let's do it. That's great.
Okay. Hold on a second here. By the way, why can't the NHL and the Olympics, you know, the NBA, they play in the Summer Olympics. That's a winter sport. Why can't we move hockey to the summer? It's not played outdoors, right?
So what? You're going to play the whole Olympics except for hockey and then wait?
Yes. Basketball's not in the Winter Olympics. We play basketball in the wintertime. Why not?
Yeah. I you know, touche, I see your point, but I want to see if you can sell it. If you can sell it, you are my mentor, and I am going to do whatever you do, I will do exactly the same way.
I like how you guys have each other's back. I mean, you're going to support him all the way to the Olympics, and he's got your back on this crazy, stupid idea you have.
And let me give props, by the way, to Chris Cook of the Chicago Tribune, who I'm stealing that idea from.
Okay. So, well, if it's Chris Cook's idea, it's not as stupid.
But I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think it's a solid, rational decision. These guys want to play. The NHL doesn't want to break up their season. I get that to a point. You're still hockey, though. Like, the NFL's king, and then MLB, and NBA. You're fourth, and more people play soccer. You want to be on that stage, I would think. I mean, it's going to be amateurs, I guess, so you're still on it. But don't you want your best showing off to the world? I would think you would, but okay. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. You know, you would you'd love to. There's no question that you want to see your best players. And, you know, and I can see both sides of things. You know, let's just say I could see Rocky Ward's side saying, you know what, I don't want to see Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, possibly Brent Seabrook, Corey Crawford. Let's go down the list. Those are my best players. Now, you know, I can go back the last Olympics, John Tavares out of the New York Islanders, their best player got hurt. Now, you know, it's a contact sport. What if one of these guys goes over there and, you know, blows out his knee, or separates his shoulder, or gets a concussion, and then they can't participate. Now, let's just, you know, and Patrick Kane broke his collarbone. Let's just say he did that in Sochi and came back and missed, you know, the last 20, 25 games because of the Olympics.
Well, you actually just, you're paying attention very well to what I taught you, because that's a great topic. 312-981-7200. Do you want your Hawks in the Olympics? Hogue?
I do, because I'm not sure I'm going to pay as much attention if they're not in it.
So you do want them, but maybe, yeah. I don't know, I feel like the diehards would not want them, and they're not that you're not a diehard. I know you've got 17 jerseys in your closet. Brent, we have to take a timeout, so you get to go along. Are you watching the Masters on Sopel Couch right now?
100%.
See, death. That's what you do on Masters Sunday, Carmi.
You know you were asleep before we called you. I know. Don't lie to us.
Hang on. It's not 4 a.m. It's 4 p.m. Okay. I just
want to make sure. Okay. Brent, we'll see you a ton this week with the hockey getting going. Thanks for jumping on, man.
All right, boys. Thanks.
Brent Sopel from his couch watching the Masters.
How about that? A little bit of news in there.
Wait.
Making the run.
Hey, let's go. Olympics for Sopel. I'm all in. 312-981-7200. You want to jump on? Hawks in the Olympics. I know you're not thinking about that right now, but we're giving you the future, man. There it is out there. or is it too much of a risk? You don't want to. You don't want to see Kane and Taves get hurt. We got to run here. Dan Long is giving me the evil eye. 720 WGN.
Reversed over toward Fisher. Johansson out of the right corner. Now to Yossi, fading to his right. Johansson in the left circle. Looking back for Yossi to score! And the Predators tally again on the Tennessee Lottery Powerball Power Play. All three goals with the man advantage.
WGN, it's that time of year. Spring is here, and that means the Blackhawks are about to make a run to their fourth Stanley Cup title in 7 years. Why not? Why not, Adam Hoge?
Why not? That's a good question. The Predators probably have something to say about it.
Got to get through Jim Diamond, who's been covering hockey since he came out of the womb back in 1999. Knows Nashville backwards and forwards. Jim, thanks for taking time on 720 WGN. Welcome.
Wow, it's great to be here, and I think I should still be in high school if that's when I came out of the womb.
Well, but that's what we had. We got you at 19 years old, Jim. Are you not 19?
I'm not, but you know, let's go with that. let's round down.
So my deep analysis on how Nashville wins this series, Jim, is that Pekka Rinne is unbelievable, stands on his head. That's the old hockey analysis. And when you're an underdog, right, you need the goalie to be spectacular. And lately, I mean, last nine games, he's given up 14 goals. That's pretty good. Is that how you see this series, the only way Nashville wins?
Yeah, there's no question. I think it's going to be a track meet just with the way both teams are, you know, kind of built. And so, you know, it's going to be a goaltender one way or the other. Pekka has, you know, in seasons past been worked so hard in the regular season, he's maybe not had a lot left for the postseason. But this year they found a backup in UC Soros that was able to take some of the workload off of Rinne in hopes of keeping him, you know, fresh for the playoffs. And there's no question he's going to have to be the difference maker in a series that will probably see a lot of goals, but it's probably going to be one goal one way or the other that determines, you know, each game.
Jim, are you a believer that the end of the regular season can carry over to a playoff series? The Hawks have really had four meaningless games here. They definitely, if you watch the games, geared it down a little bit. They ended up losing all four. It didn't really matter, except for now they got to ramp it back up by what we're thinking is Thursday, the opener. We'll see. The schedule's still not out yet. But meanwhile, Nashville's been playing, you know, I guess they've sort of been in it here, but they have lost three of four going into the end of the regular season here. But they've had a little bit more to play for, I think, in those last four games.
Right. I mean, they've had the spot virtually locked up for the last couple of weeks. It was only, you know, mathematical that it happened, you know, toward the end there, you know, when the Kings finally fell out of it. But they were resting some guys down the stretch. So I don't think they were playing terribly. They just had a lot of different bodies in the lineup, just trying to get some guys healthy. You saw Mike Fisher miss a few games down the stretch. So I don't think it's really indicative of how the team is or is going to play. Peter Laviolette talked to us today in the media, and you know he said, you know, he didn't like a lot of the results of the last few games, but he liked what he saw from a lot of the players. So whether that's coach speak or not, I don't think it's really an ominous sign for the team, you know, just the results in those last few games.
Do you think they are paying attention at all to maybe trying to avoid playing the Blackhawks, or did that not matter?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think so. You know, they had such a tough haul last year when they went to Anaheim in the first round, and then, you know, had San Jose. They were just so beaten up physically, and I think quite a bit fatigued from all the cross-continental travel that you know, I get almost an indication that they're kind of looking forward to trying to play Chicago to measure up against them, because they haven't done well in the previous playoff series before. And, you know, they were going with the old mantra that, you know, you have to be prepared to beat anybody. So I think they're hopefully actually welcoming it if you're taking their word for it. But I don't think there was any act of avoidance there.
You mentioned that Nashville's coach, Peter Laviolette. I mean, he won a cup with the Hurricanes back in 06. He took the Flyers to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2010. He can't outmaneuver a coach Q, though, can he, Jim? I mean, come on now.
I don't think so. We were talking about it today. I don't think he's defeated Coach Q, you know, on the road at all in any of their matchups. But I think it's going to come down to the players. I mean, you know, we talked about the goaltending, and you know, Chicago had some, you know, maybe shaky goaltending early in a couple of those games in the previous series. But you don't match up with Coach Q's resume unless you're you know, Scotty Bowman or something. The guy is just a legend. There's no question there.
Okay, so you mentioned, and we're talking to Jim Diamond, who covers the Predators. You mentioned that maybe the players are kind of embracing the idea of playing the Hawks again, getting another crack on against them despite some of the struggles that they've had in the past. Of course, you know, in terms of what the fans care about, it's certainly been a storyline in both probably Nashville and Chicago here, the ways the Predators have tried to keep the Blackhawks fans out of the games that are down there in Nashville. And I think a lot of people here are just kind of laughing at it because you know they're coming and you know they're going to find a way in. Do you think that the Blackhawks are in the Predators' heads at all as they go into the series?
Yeah, David Poile, the general manager, spoke today as well, and he was asked about it. He said no. So, but you know, I just think you know he wanted to give you know Chicago all the credit for you know being the best team in the Western Conference and being the you know kind of the Stanley Cup winner the last couple of years they've had. But you know he said you know a lot of the personnel is different. A lot of the players who were younger back then you know have matured have grown. So. You know, there's probably some element to it. There's no way they would ever admit to it. But, you know, if you want to, you have to beat the man if you're going to be the man. And I think, you know, they're looking forward to that challenge. But, yeah, there is kind of a bit of a big brother thing, I think, to, you know, with wanting to face Chicago and finally beat them.
Jim Diamond's been covering the NHL and the Predators for the Associated Press, the Sports Ticker, Examiner.com. 2012, Jim, readers of the Nashville Scene voted you Nashville's best sports writer. I look at this like, it's kind of weird to me still that Nashville has a hockey team. And then I look at your, I mean, that's just bizarre, and you're the guy that's like on the ground doing it. And yet, you look at the Predators' attendance, you've sold out every home game. I mean, they like coming, it's always a story here that, you know, to keep Chicago out, but there are a ton of hockey fans in Nashville, which to me doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Most people in Nashville aren't from Nashville. The city has grown immeasurably. I think I moved here in 98, so I guess that was a year before I was born, according to your calculations. it's just tremendous, you know, growth. You know, people from all over, whether it's the healthcare industry or the music industry, bringing people here. And they're from all over. A lot of hockey playing cities, a lot of Canadian cities. But and the Predators do a great job of marketing the game and marketing their team. It's a fun atmosphere to watch a hockey game. You know, it's not one of the, you know, the stodgier buildings to be in. They keep it fun. So again, and it's affordable too. They're not outrageously priced tickets. So you know, they've done what they needed to do. But yeah, that was a big mark for them, selling out every single game this year, and it's a testament to how hard they work. And you know, the Predators, you know, used to not be a great fun team to watch, but there's some really exciting players out there too that are really marketable. You know, guys like PK Subban and Philip Forsberg, guys like that are, you know, people want to see them. You see their jerseys walking around the city, so it has become a hockey city for sure.
Wow.
So big wow. Yeah, big picture question here. Why haven't, I mean, you know this franchise inside and out, why haven't they been able to have, I mean, more success, you know, once they get to the playoffs? Why haven't they been able to, you know, compete for the Stanley Cup final?
I think it's just been a case of, you know, running up against better, deeper teams. I mean, you look at the last time they played Chicago in a series, Shea Weber ended up hurt on a, you know, almost a nothing hit by Brandon Saad. And it was, you know, like, their whole team kind of came crumbling down after that. So, you know, they haven't had the ability to absorb, you know, huge personnel losses like a Shea Weber or a Mike Fisher, you know, a couple of years ago as well. So, you know, it's tough. There's a lot of good hockey teams and a lot of good, you know, players here, but for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to withstand the rigors. Winning a Stanley Cup is hard.
Yeah.
So they just haven't been able to do it. They're not built. And we were talking with David Poile earlier in the year, you know, about Chicago specifically and how Nashville was, you know, decent back in those years, but Chicago was so horrible that they, you know, drafted high and drafted well with those picks. And the Predators have just never been bad enough to get one, you know, like a top five pick, except for the, you know, the one year where they ended up getting Seth Jones. But, you know, it's a good question, but it's a tough one. It's not an easy trophy to win, that's for sure.
Jim Diamond, if you want to follow him during the series, you don't have to follow him for life, just for the series, and you could do at Diamond Hockey, and then if you don't want to hear about Nashville hockey anymore, you can unfollow. I don't think Jim would be offended, but he'd love to have you for the next couple of weeks. Last one, Jim. If I'm walking around downtown Nashville, what jersey am I going to see the most of?
Most, you'll see a Roman Josi jersey a lot. He's an excellent defenseman, and the ladies tell me he's pretty good looking too. So you'll see a lot of Roman Josi jerseys, probably Pekarinen second and PK Subban third. But the Swedes are charging hard. Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson, I think you'll see that within the next year or so. They'll be up there jersey-wise.
Saw Mark Knopfler at the Ryman Theater, Jim. Know that. It was a big night in my musical life.
It's an incredible venue.
It really is. It was awesome. It's like 2,000 people in there. You got two levels, Hoag. Big time. Go down to Nashville. Go upper level Ryman Theater, I'm telling you.
I think we should take the show down there.
Let's go. Jim, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, my pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me.
Jim Diamond, freelance writer, member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. I'm not a member of anything that has the word professional in it.
That's a good point. I don't think you are.
Most definitely not.
At Diamond Hockey is the Twitter account. I just hit the follow button.
Did you hit the follow?
I did. We got 2 weeks of Nashville, Chicago here.
All right, I'm going in at Diamond Hockey.
You could be affiliated with a professional then.
That's right. Yeah. I follow a professional on Twitter. That's a move for me.
That's a big move.
Jim, how many followers does Jim Diamond have? 5,467. Why does he have a picture of that looks to me like Joe Buck?
That does a little bit. Maybe he looks like Joe Buck. I don't know what he looks like.
And you're telling me that if you look at Jim Diamond's Twitter, tell me that guy's not 19?
That's like a 19-year-old Joe Buck. That's what he is.
Jim Diamond is 19. PHWA member. Professional Hockey Writers Association member. That's what it says. Bang.
I'm serious. We got to take the show down there, hang out with Spike Odell a little bit. Let's do it.
Can you get that done? Whenever you ask management for anything, it happens.
I mean, I'll ask.
Well, then, I mean, if you ask, I think we'll be there.
Depends on the games. We need a Sunday game. Can we get a game 3 on Sunday? If they play Thursday, Friday, Sunday?
How about, okay.
That'd be quick. That'd be happy. That'd be really quick to play 3 games in 4 days.
773 texting. Hockey doesn't suck, but I don't care. It is soccer to me. Baseball and basketball. Football is losing its luster. There's a synopsis of all sports.
I sort of agree with that last point.
That football's losing its luster?
Yeah, I think
you're Mr. Football. You can't say that.
But I think it's slowly happening. Very, very slowly.
I kind of want to follow up on that coming back. And there's another text that's very important that I want to read here that's complimenting the show, and I think there's like a slight criticism in there as well. All boiled in that I think people will find entertaining.
Pretty typical.
720 WGN. Keeping you up to date on the Masters. Adam Hoag, anything going on? You up to date over there?
Yeah, I'm up to date. We got Justin Rose with a one-shot lead on Sergio Garcia, who did actually bogey to get down to 7. It was just 3 holes after I reported.
Sergio's
that
trailing?
Yeah, Sergio's down a shot.
Come on, Sergio.
My guy, Matt Kuchar.
Mm-hmm. Why is he your guy?
Because he's just one of my favorite golfers. Okay.
You like his swing? Like the way he approaches the ball? Is it his putting?
I just like him. He seems like a cool dude, right?
Good pants?
Yeah, good pants.
Good pants.
All right, great pants.
Way to go.
He was even on the tournament on the 11th hole today.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He just eagled 16. He's 5 under.
Wow.
He went birdie, 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 par, eagle in 5 holes, and he's now only 3 shots back. With only 2 holes to go, that's going to be tough to win, but Matt Kuchar making a huge run in Augusta.
You know what I love about Kuchar is the never-say-die attitude that he's always brought to the table. No matter where you're sitting on a Sunday afternoon, the tournament is not over until it's over, and Kuchar sat there, he stared at that fairway and said, you know what, I'm coming right at you, and I'm bringing my A game, and it's going to happen.
I don't think I can do 95 more minutes with this golf sarcasm.
Kuchar stared down his 5-iron and said, buddy, we're going for a ride. I love golf. Cubs beat the Brewers at the final 7-4.
White Sox lose to the Twins 4-1. Season's going to plan so far for both teams.
White Sox, okay. At least they won yesterday, got the bats out a little bit. Sox are now 2-3, which isn't terrible.
It's not good if you're trying to tank. I'm not worried about that. You know what I'm more worried about?
2-3 on the first homestand of the year for the Sox. Now go heading on the road. Where are they going? I should know that. I don't.
Cleveland.
They're going to Cleveland. That's not going to be easy. Cleveland's very good. Cleveland's a problem.
Cleveland's really good.
Yes.
Well, they were really good last year.
Yeah, but they're
and
even,
they got they better.
They might even be better.
They should be better. They had a lot of young guys like the Cubs who should be better, and they added Edwin Encarnacion.
Yeah, they're off. Sox are off tomorrow, and then at Cleveland for, I believe that's got to be the Tribe's home opener on Tuesday. And then two more with Cleveland, and then they go to Minnesota, and then the Yankees, and then back home with the Tribe. That's a tough schedule for the White Sox. Not that it really matters. You're trying to lose.
It's great.
It's great. Great schedule. Just bury them early.
I have to admit, this is a weird. I'm going to say this is the weirdest week I've ever had watching White Sox baseball.
What does it feel like?
It I don't know how it feels like. It's I don't care that they're losing. I'm still happy when they're winning, but then they don't. Then when they, I still get mad when they do something stupid though. Like if there's something that offends my baseball sensibilities, which you know happens quite often. I'm very easily offended when it comes to baseball. That's really the only time, like, I think all week where anything bothered me. It's just weird.
I remember the position very well. I actively rooted for the Cubs to lose. I wanted them to lose.
Yeah, see, I'm not doing that. I think the White Sox are, well, they are. They're in a different spot than the Cubs. I don't know that this is going to get to the depths of the Cubs.
It can if they make a couple trades.
And I'm not, and I actually think it maybe should get that deep. The problem is, the White Sox are in year one of this. That was 2012 for the Cubs.
Yes, but
the White Sox already have their Chris Bryant. They're also taking a completely different approach by loading up on starting pitching, which is not what the Cubs did.
Right, and the Cubs didn't have Chris Sale to trade, and they didn't have.
Right, well, that's what I mean. They're probably already in late 2013. To just go by the comparisons, right? But the difference is they still have a couple tradable assets.
Well, they have a huge one in Quintana,
right? Huge one. Gets me back to what I've cared about. Not so much the wins and losses this week, but trade value has mattered to me. Okay?
Right. And
Quintana was awful on opening day. He was better today. He's still not great. That's a little concerning for week one.
Well, just a reminder in Cubs history, why it's important, extremely important for veteran guys to pitch over their head like James Shields. The Cubs traded Scott Feldman, who they signed on a one-year flyer. Hopefully you'll pitch well. They traded Scott Feldman for Jake Arrieta, basically. It was Feldman and Scott Clevenger for Arrieta and Pedro Strop. I mean, it would have been a good deal just for Pedro Strop.
Yeah.
That's the type of trade that changes a franchise.
Okay, it's funny you bring this up because yesterday I was thinking about this, and it was really my interview a couple weeks ago with Jed Hoyer that made me kind of realize this. Even though they got it done in 5 years, the five-year plan was kind of unrealistic.
It was. They jumped.
They hit every single prospect, and they had one of the most ridiculous, maybe the best trade in franchise history happen.
That's why he's the number one leader in the world. That's why he should be the president of the United States.
I'm fine with it. I'm just like, you had all that happen, and it still came down to extra innings in Game 7 of the World Series.
Right.
Like, the five-year plan was kind of unrealistic.
It was, and they did it. Okay. Quick timeout. A whole lot more baseball coming up after 4:30 here.
I got problems with the Illini, too.
Okay, yeah, that's coming up, too. And there is one Cub who we should be concerned about. Bring that up coming back here. 720 WGN.
Texter informed us that Matt Kuchar's eagle was actually a hole-in-one. Thanks to Jay in Ohio for that text. Hey, didn't see the highlight. That sounds awesome, though.
I did see that for a second on Twitter, but so focused on the show that I didn't want to say something that I wasn't sure of. Masters going on. You feeling guilty being here? That's how we started the show. I know that you'd love to be on your couch right now.
My dad texted me, said he left the White Sox game to go home and watch the Masters.
That was a good move by Richard Hogue.
I texted him, I go, I'm okay with it. Thumbs up emoji.
Yeah, I mean, Masters once a year. A lot of White Sox games. How many games did your dad go to this week?
4 out of 5.
He's on the $39 April pass.
I got it for him for his birthday. He's taking full advantage.
$39.
And I think he's gone down and sat in his old season ticket seats because he didn't renew his season tickets this year. And I think he went down there and sat in them every game.
That's loyalty.
And, like, at least three of the four games.
I mean, I was up in Milwaukee on Friday. Debating whether I want to out myself, but I guess I will. I bought the cheapest ticket, and I started just past third base, and then I moved in between home and third, and then I went behind home plate, and then I went in between home and first, and then by the time Ben Zobrist rolled into a double play, I was in like the third row, and then I said I got to go because I'm taking care of Luna the dog, hashtag Luna the dog, and Luna the dog was on about 8 hours at that point, and I had an hour and a half drive back home.
You got Luna back, huh?
I'm doing a great job. We have bonded.
Luna.
Please, if you know my brother and his wife and my niece, don't tell them. But I was at the dog park last night. They don't do the dog park thing. There was a very friendly animal. I let Luna off leash. She was playing. She was having the time of her life. I felt like I was doing a great job. I felt extremely nervous that something bad was going to happen because they don't do that with the dog. But I went for it.
Everything was fine?
Everything was fine. She had a great time. She had a huge workout at about 10:30 at night. She came back. She was exhausted.
I couldn't believe how empty that stadium was Friday. Cubs? I should say empty.
It was pretty empty.
I would have thought it's that...
People on Friday, man, they're working. Then you got to get up there.
But first game post-World Series, it was impossible to get tickets for the home opener.
It's not that... Those tickets...
Really?
Yeah. They're coming down. I mean, here we can. I'll look on StubHub right now.
I just thought for sure. Here's your first opportunity, Friday night in Milwaukee, not that far away, to go see your world champion.
I thought so.
Chicago
too.
Cubs. You mentioned last week the possibility of going to the game, and I was like, okay, but aren't tickets going to be hard to get?
They were not hard to get, but you know, it was interesting. Like normally when I go to Milwaukee, there's 1,000 scalpers on your way up to the window. And you can get seats for under face, and you can, I mean, I've gotten great seats up there. And then there was not one scalper out there, so I had to go to the window.
Why were they not out there? Some kind of crackdown?
I think because they gouge Cub fans coming up there. They make it like a premium game. Cheapest seat in the upper deck is $27.
Yeah, okay.
Which is a lot.
Cheapest seat at Miller Park?
Up top is 27.
For a Cubs game.
Yes.
They up it, right?
Yeah. Like the cheapest seat at Wrigley for a game in April is like $10.
Yeah, the Sox are 9.
Right. 27. I mean, it's a lot.
And the upper deck was actually closed for one of the games this week, my dad said. He had an upper deck. Oh, no. He had so he has that ballpark pass, right? They usually assign you a seat like a couple hours for the game. They didn't even assign him one. It was like general admission.
Right.
The other day.
So wherever you want, man. Love it. Cheapest ticket to get in tomorrow night, you could get a standing roomer for $99. You can get an outfield terrace for $100.
In the upper deck?
$239 down the right field line.
For $100?
Uh-huh.
That's not bad.
Singles.
First game, World Series?
Right.
108 years?
Yep. You want to go up?
I mean, that's shocking to me.
They have not. And there's, let's see here. Let's go best value. I am a StubHub addicted. Best value. No, you don't want to do that.
Do you think the electronic Major League Baseball has been switching to like everything's electronic? Like show your phone to get into the game and scan your phone. Do you think that's having any impact on scalpers? Because I'll tell you what, for me, and I know you hate paying the fees.
I do hate paying the fees.
But like if I were to go down there tomorrow night and try to get in, yeah. I would feel way better about spending an extra $15 on my phone to get a ticket I know is real. You know, it's like almost like insurance.
Yeah, but it's not going to be $100 when you go out there. It's going to be $50 in my utopian world of scalping. Like it's going to.
There's also been a lot of fake tickets out there.
Well, see, and that's the other thing. Now I don't know how I do not know how it works because you cannot get into Wrigley Field with a printed ticket, a printed paper seat. That is illegal.
Yeah, they got rid of them.
So what does that mean?
But they got rid of them because those are the easiest. People are just copying them. And selling them.
They got rid of them. They didn't get rid of them for that. They got rid of them because they want to corner the marketplace. They want everything coming into their own pocket.
Right, but it kills two birds with one stone.
It's total greed. Greed city. Which is the way of the world, I get it. But I don't know what that means for the scalping.
But you can still get... I guess you have to...
I honestly, I'm going to the Bulls game tomorrow night, not the Cubs game, because... That's what I'm doing. I
don't think it. It helps StubHub too. Because okay, let's
it does
say,
help StubHub. Let's say it absolutely helps StubHub.
You have tickets. You only have the printout tickets, which don't exist anymore. But the easiest way to sell them now is to put them on StubHub.
312-981-7200. If you're a scalper and you don't want to out yourself, that's fine. But I actually would love to hear what that's going to look like. I know you guys are out there.
I'm guessing. I don't know. You know way more about this than me. I think it's making their life really hard.
I would think.
Maybe that's why there weren't any scalpers in Milwaukee.
I mean, do you have to have the actual ticket? I don't know if the Brewers have the same policy as the Cubs have now. But everything's got to be on your phone, like
Or you can have the actual printout ticket too. I think.
Right, but that's like old school.
I know.
Nobody has the only way you get that ticket is if you like sold it to Gold Coast Tickets, right? And then you go to Gold Coast Tickets and you pick them up. I mean, that's how it used to be with scalping.
Yeah.
And then the internet happened, and then being a season ticket holder became way less valuable because the clubs knew exactly what everything was worth. So that's why we got five-tier pricing. That's why the opening day ticket tomorrow for the Cubs is in the field box is $180 a ticket. And then Thursday's day game at $120 is $50. Because they know no one's going to the Thursday day game, and they'll be lucky to get $50, and it's probably worth $20. And they know that a lot of people will pay the $180 to sit in the field box, which is, at any rate. Sorry, that was a huge tangent.
No, but I find it very interesting. And I wonder if there's some confusion from fans, too. Like, I'm pretty technologically sound, but I have to say, when I bought tickets last weekend for the Brewers-White Sox game, it was a little confusing what I was supposed to do with the email to get them on my phone.
So that's what you did? You didn't print?
I figured it out. No, was there a printout option? I don't think there was a printout. No, there was. I think there was a printout option. But I didn't want to deal with printing them out. I just want them off. Why would you deal with four pieces of paper when you get them on your one phone and you literally, when you go in, I don't know if you've ever done this, but yeah, they swipe.
Oh.
I like four tickets right here. And you just swipe left, swipe left. I know you swipe left for other things, but I just go ticket,
right,
ticket.
Swipe right.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Left, right.
Left is no, right is please. I'm begging. Thank you. So I swipe right, 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 right. Okay, fine. Left on you. I said there's one Cub to be worried about, you really shouldn't be, but...
I'm just looking for the negative.
Anthony Rizzo.
Okay.
0 for 5, sitting a $160.
Now, Chris Bryant didn't have a hat, I just said hat because this Dodger fan just walked by with his Dodger hat and it was in my head.
Go back to L.A. You're not welcome here. I'm kidding. Welcome to Chicago. Have a great trip. We'll see you at Wrigley tomorrow, pal.
That was awesome. I thought you were being serious for a second. Chris Bryant didn't have a hit for like the first four games, and
right.
Then he crushes the ball the last 2 days.
Right, 3 for 4.
Relax.
3 for 4 today, up to .269. On base percentage, .367. He's only slugging .346 though. Not a lot of pop yet out of Chris Bryant, but Rizzo 0 for 5, hitting .160. Kyle Schwarber today 2 for 5, .231, but he's hitting bombs. How many home runs for Kyle Schwarber?
How many does he have this week? Three or two?
He's got two.
I think he hits at least 30 this year.
I got him at 38.
Yeah, I could see that.
Dan Long, you want to jump in there?
I would be thrilled with 38. I was thinking around 30.
How long does he stay in the leadoff spot, though, I'm wondering?
I think he's going to be there. I don't think that's changing.
And you know me, I was on the show last week saying I get it. Like, you're trying to get him up in the lineup, but it's...
They don't really have anybody else to plug in there, though.
I know.
They could put they could go old school John Jay. They could go new school Al Mora. They could go old school Ben Zobrist. I don't think they're going to do any of that. I think he's staying right there. I mean, if Jason Hayward keeps going the way he's going, maybe Jay Hay could be leading off. He's 2 for 5 today with 3 RBIs.
You're going to have Jason Hayward jersey by the end of the year.
Jason Hayward is slugging .429. Sitting triples. He had one triple all of last season. He had a triple today. Jason Hayward. Go Jason Hayward. 312-981-7200. I just do want to make mention that the guy who was pitching for the Brewers today, Zach Davies, he looked like he was actually pitching for like Highland Park High School. The guy looked like 19 years old.
He also pitched like that.
I mean, Yeah, it was. I'm looking at him like, that is not a major league pitcher. And then I checked, because the Cubs were killing him early. They were up 5-0 before it started. He gave up 6 runs to the Rockies in his first start in 4 1/3. Hey, Chicago Cubs fan, this is the event everyone is calling a don't miss. It's the Cubs Moments of Victory. Hoag's going to be there. It's the art exhibition Saturday. It started yesterday. It goes through the 30th. It's at Water Tower Place on Michigan Avenue. You can relive the thrills of the greatest World Series ever.
With my guy Opie.
That's right. Through these never-before-seen paintings by Major League Baseball's famed-sanctioned artist, Opie.
I forgot his last name now.
Otterstad.
I wanted to go Oppenberg.
Otterstad. O squared. Opie Otterstad. For more information, go to CubsArtEvent.com. That's CubsArtEvent.com. Admission is free. All artworks are available for purchase. Don't miss your chance to own a unique piece of Cubs history.
All right, when we come back, I want to give you an update on what the hot White Sox prospects did this week.
Yes.
We're on Charlotte Knights watch, and also Birmingham and Winston-Salem.
It's also Cubs World Series watch 2019. That's what's going to happen.
It's Cubs World Series
versus the White Sox
prospects.
But it's Cubs White Sox World Series 2019.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My bad. I forgot we were going for that.
That's what's happening.
Absolutely.
720 WGN.
467 in the series. And he drives one to right. That's way back at the warning track, at the wall. That ball's over the wall, a home run. Just got over the wall. The first home run in AAA for Yoan Moncada. His first hit today. He's hit safely in all 3 games this season. And that's his 8th hit of the series.
Look at that. Dan Long going deep.
8-for-20. Yoan Moncada this week.
When's he coming up, Adam Hogue?
In 4 games, 8-for-20, and that includes an 0-for-4 today. He was not very good today. 1 home run, which you just heard. 7 singles. He's just going single, 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 single.
It's fine.
And I don't have his updated OPS as of today, but coming into today, it was 1.217. Granted, small sample size.
It's all right.
I think the contract thing, I think it's May 10th.
May 10th. Yoan Moncada, is that?
I think he's got to stay down there till mid-May at least. I know some of the White Sox writers think it'll be even longer than that. They're not going to rush this thing. But I'll tell you what, I think I said this a few weeks ago, I want to see Yoan Moncada do to AAA what Chris Bryant did to AAA in a very short period of time. But the point is, look, a lot of prospects don't work out. It's baseball. It's sort of a crapshoot. But the good ones usually crush single A, crush double A, crush triple A. And they don't struggle until they really come to the, like, maybe there's an adjustment period when they get to the majors. Or maybe they start hot, teams adjust back because it is Major League Baseball, and then the good ones make that next adjustment, which I think Chris Bryant went through too. I mean, people remember his rookie year, it was a great year, but he was having some trouble with some low strikes that year. When he came back in the next season, that was not a problem. And all of a sudden, he was the MVP.
Somehow he just like, hey, yeah, Chris, your loft angle is a little bit too high. Can you straighten it out? Which is, I would think, near impossible to do. And he just did it.
Yeah.
And became the MVP. By the way, if you're just kind of new to sports or a casual and you're remembering who is Yoan Moncada, that was the number one prospect in all of baseball. The Red Sox had him and the White Sox got him by trading Chris Sale. So that's like the big, the White Sox are hitching their wagon to Yoan Moncada along with some others, but that's like the big guy for him.
Well, and then the second guy they got in that trade with Boston was Michael Kopech.
Who struck out like 100 guys yesterday in 4 innings.
He made his debut in Birmingham, double A. Now, the plan was actually to start him in single A, and he was so good in spring training, they bumped him to double A. So the question was, okay, how would he do there? First start, he only pitched 4 1/3. A lot of these guys did not, like Reynaldo Lopez only pitched 3 innings the other day. That's got to be just like sort of adjusting to the season out of spring training because these guys didn't really pitch a long time in spring training.
It's all part of the plan, which is a great book.
Probably. But 4 1/3, 10 strikeouts.
Yeah. Guy's just a fireballer, man. He's like, how tall is he? He's like 6'5".
He's tall.
Yeah. I mean,
long hair, kind of looks like Noah Syndergaard.
He's the right-handed Randy Johnson. Kopech and Moncada.
Now, he did give up a home run, but I'll take 10 strikeouts and 4 1/3 tells me you're dominating double-A hitters.
Yeah.
One start, but very encouraging. start. A couple other numbers this week. Reynaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito, those were the two pitchers,
right?
The two main pitchers, and also Dane Dunning, who they got in the
Adam Eaton,
which is crazy. They got three, like,
which makes me think these guys aren't good. By the way, if I'm not trading a stud pitcher for Adam Eaton, I don't think anybody of any intelligence would do that.
I think baseball looks at Adam Eaton a lot differently than we do. It's crazy.
I hate that whole baseball statistical breakdown. Adam Eaton's worth more than you think watching him every day. Trust us, we're willing. I just don't believe that you would trade. Giolito's got some arm trouble. That's part of the reason I think he was dealt.
And his velocity's been dipping.
Right.
And he did his first start, 4 1/3, 6 hits, 5 runs, 4 were earned.
Right.
4 were earned.
Right.
2 walks, 4 strikeouts. Reynaldo Lopez, I think, has sort of passed him in the eyes of the White Sox right now in terms of guys they're going to get up sooner. And in 3 innings the other day, he struck out 5. So a good start there.
We will be following the White Sox in the minor leagues all season long, as we did for the Cubs as they built their World Series, and the White Sox hopefully will do the same.
Carson Fulmer was also good this week. Very encouraging.
I like Carson Fulmer. Yeah. Wears a nice goggle, or whatever you call those. Mike, welcome to 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. You want to talk White Sox there, Mike? I'm a little confused.
Oh, sir, I don't want to shoot you down right away, but I got to ask JP about the coffee first, man. It's like something that I can get that make me feel like I'm on, soul train, like your dad.
Well, JP's not here today, but
I heard about that JP coffee.
Yeah, you can buy it.
Peyton Coffee's delicious. I have it every morning.
Hoaxer, I don't want to shoot you down, but all right, Adam Eaton. He wasn't a base dealer. He couldn't get that leadoff, man. Tim Anderson got it.
Yep. Good point there, Mike. Adam Eaton didn't steal a whole ton of bases.
No, he was not a good baseball. Look, I was not a huge Adam Eaton fan. But what I'm saying is baseball evaluators love the guy.
They do. Better as a right fielder. Very good value for the salary. They love Adam Eaton.
I was trying to find his WAR from last year. He was a pretty solid player last year, though.
I'm doing my best to somewhat embrace.
He was a 6.2 WAR last season.
Dan Long's a huge baseball guy. What's your favorite baseball stat? How do you determine whether is it his BABIP? Is it his slugging percentage? Is it his OPS?
You know what I'm thinking.
What's your favorite baseball stat?
I like ERA plus for pitchers.
Oh, my God. I didn't think we were going there.
Yeah.
ERA plus is what?
It's ERA adjusted for, variables, ballparks and day and night games and all other stuff real quick. I actually have to look something up real quick, too.
It was a good enough explanation.
Carm,
the whole point of these stats is that he takes out variables that are not fair to the player.
ERA plus definition. Hang on. Adjusted ERA plus, often simply abbreviated to ERA plus, is a pitching statistic in baseball. It adjusts a pitcher's earned run average according to the pitcher's ballpark. Very good, Dan. And the ERA of other pitchers in the league. Adjusted to the ballpark, because not all ballparks are the same. But how would it do when a Wrigley Field, which sometimes it blows in, sometimes it blows out, sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's warm? Maybe we need ERA plus minus weather plus.
And OPS plus for hitters, because it's on a scale of, 100 is per. It's easy to generalize because it's on a scale of 100 is league average. So you can basically tell just from a quick glance whether a guy was very below average or.
Hoag is so mad right now.
Why?
I don't know exactly.
I'm mad at Karn for, not understanding this stuff in 2017.
It
makes it easier to evaluate in broad strokes, is what I'm saying.
I'm not understanding it, so.
You need to read Brian Kenny's book. I'm going to give it to you. I have it at home.
Weren't we just talking 5 minutes ago how we have no time to read books?
Yeah, we were.
You're going to give me Brian Kenny's book?
We literally did just have a discussion during a break. Our listeners didn't hear.
Let me read you a text, if I may, here, just for a second here. Hold on. I want to read this to you, Hoag, because this is who I'm representing right now. It's not just about me. It's about the listeners to this station. 312. I'm a 40-year-old woman and love your show. I hate that it's an hour shorter on Saturdays. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much for saying that. That person right there, I guarantee you, needs an ERA plus definition, just like I do. You don't know what ERA plus is, do you?
Yes, I do. It's adjusted for ballpark.
Okay, what? Okay, tell me what's VORP.
VORP? Yes. I don't know.
Okay, I made up that statistic.
I know.
What is
VORP? Stop trying to make yourself feel better.
Tell me what ISO is. Do you know what ISO is?
Not off the top of my head.
ISO, baseball. Do you know what ISO is there, Dan?
I don't. That one's too mathematically involved for me.
Isolated power is a sabermetric computation used to measure a batter's raw power. One formula is slugging percentage minus batting average. ISO.
Why are you so against something so simple because like OPS plus and WAR,
I'll tell you why.
A normal person like you makes it very easy to understand how a player is playing compared to the rest of the league.
That's a fair point that in theory I can look at, well, Chris Bryant's got a WAR of 8.8 and the next closest player is 6.6, so he should be the MVP. But all it does...
It doesn't need to be just based on that, too, but part of the equation. Like, you could say, oh, wow, this guy's...
But that also tells you... You take Chris Bryant away from the Cubs, they have 8 less wins.
Yeah, but I don't
that's a way to put it in layman's terms.
But I don't believe that. I don't think like three. I don't. I don't think you could just boil it down to this whole. Okay, he's worth 8 wins, and
Let me give you something shorter, since you're not going to read Brian Kenny's book. Jeff Passan wrote a phenomenal story on what these advanced metrics are doing, and not only they're trying to improve stuff, like they're coming up with a new WAR right now. Based on
StatCast
and things that are actually getting measured in the ballpark.
See, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be a new WAR and the new WAR plus.
Yeah, but this stuff is real things. There's cameras. I've seen them. They're impressive. You go to the ballpark and there's cameras everywhere that are measuring how the angle a guy's taking to the ball. The percentage chance that he was going to catch it when the ball came off the bat. If a guy makes a catch and he had a 16% chance to catch it, that means it's a pretty good catch, right?
Sure.
Pretty easy to understand.
Okay, I like that one. I understood it and I get it.
Route efficiency.
But okay, this is what I listen to though, because I consume people talking baseball and I hear I see it on Twitter all the time. He's got a great exit velocity. Like that's the huge thing now. Exit velocity, man. But sometimes his exit velocity is he hits a lot of line drives, so it doesn't compute as well. He needs to have more loft. So it's just it empowers. The nerds are being empowered, man. Baseball nerds are being empowered with this stuff. I can't take it. Because then they just sit there and they try to act like they're super smart because they've read these stats, and it's got nothing to do with actually, like, understanding sports to me.
Launch angle equals a home run. It's science.
I just ripped up a read. Like, it's enraging.
Did you do the read?
No.
Now you got to uncrumple.
I got uncrumple. Like, it's I'm sorry. I'm bothered by it. I don't think I'm the only one either. 312-981-7200. Like, do you want to hear this stuff? It's baseball, man. Like, I can't do it. I can't. I'm going to fight against it, Hogue. I know it's exasperating for you.
I want to show you Kyle Schwarber's exit velocity and his home run the other night against St. Louis.
Great exit velocity. You know what I enjoyed? I like sitting there, and when Kyle Schwarber's at the plate, I think he's going to hit a home run every single time or strike out, one of the two.
This is my kingdom. Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
All right, so I spent the break.
I learned something. I did.
Trying to explain this stuff to Carmen. No one's trying to... I understand your frustration with like the crazy stuff. I don't think it needs to go that far. This is stuff that I love, and I recommend this follow to everyone listening to the show. Go to Twitter, follow at Darren W. DarenW. There's only one R in there.
Darren Williams is his name.
He is at the... He runs baseballsavant.com, but he's also a part of this... Like, he's a very important person in where baseball is going right now. These stat casts, the technology that's being put in the ballparks. Go find that Jeff Passan story. I'll find it. I'll send it to you and everyone listening. It was written in early March. Jeff Passan from Yahoo wrote it. And it really dove into how these guys are revolutionizing baseball. There's very easy numbers.
Next week, Dan Long, Darren Williams, at Darren W. on Twitter. Let's get him on the show. Let's have a deep discussion.
That'd be good. He'd be great.
Okay.
He'd be great. But if you follow him, he gives you these graphics. So here's Kyle Schwarber's home run the other night, his huge go-ahead home run against the Cardinals. And here, I'll retweet this for my followers on Twitter, at Adam Hoag, so you can find this, because I'm looking at this, and this is obviously radio. But he gives you a nice graphic
Good graphic.
That shows you the exit velocity off the bat was 112 miles per hour. That's great exit velocity.
Tremendous exit velocity.
And for those that don't understand that, that's the speed the ball is coming off the bat. So the pitch might have been 98 miles an hour. I don't know what it was. But it came off his bat at 112. Okay?
Look at that exit velocity.
And then the other thing to look at is launch angle. His launch angle was 29 degrees. Now, this is where you kind of have to really pay attention to this to understand. But anywhere around like the high 20s.
Yeah.
Low 30s, really high 20s. That is a great launch angle, depending on your exit velocity, to get the ball out of the ballpark. So this is what not to get too complicated, but this is what they do. They take the exit velocity and your launch angle, and they can tell you, and I'm just making this up at this point, oh, that's a home run 98% of the time. But that's what they do. They convert these numbers into something that's very easy to understand. If a guy hits a ball that hard with that angle,
right,
it's going to go out of the ballpark this many times.
Why can't I just know how many home runs he hit? And like, oh, he hit a ton of home runs.
But you can, but why that might be flawed is, so let's say a guy hits a ball that's out of the ballpark 98% of the time.
Right, he plays
well,
in
that
Kansas
leaves
City
you 2%. And let's say a guy just randomly got hit to the deepest part of the ballpark in San Francisco, which has that deep corner, right? Or that deep gap. And maybe the guy played it perfectly and he caught it. Well, in the stats you just brought up, how many home runs does he have? Maybe what's more important to follow is how many home runs should he have had? Because there's probably three or four that did go out that shouldn't have.
I get it. If you have a guy that plays in a big ballpark like Kansas City, like the leading home run hitter for the Royals was Steve Balboni with, like, I think it's 31 or 32. And so what would that, like, if I'm the Cubs GM and I'm going to trade for somebody, well, how many horns would he hit at Wrigley Field? You know, playing in the summertime and with the wind blowing out.
Yep.
All that type of stuff.
And if for some reason his homer total is, you know, higher than normal, you have a way to measure, you know, how hard he's hitting the ball on a consistent basis. Is he getting lucky with some of these?
Right.
You know, it's just a way to level the playing
field. Because a guy could play at Wrigley Field and just sort of, like, over the course of a season, have a really lucky year where he just so happened to put this many balls in the air on days where the wind's blowing out, and he had 25 home runs. And really, his career numbers show that if you look at his exit velocity and his launch angle over the course of a season, it might tell you he probably should have had 15. Now, I'm not saying it's that drastic all the time. I'm just trying to make this easy to understand. And so for the scouts that do this for a living, they can look at, 112 miles per hour and 29 degrees off the bat. That ball was crushed. Just so it happened to be caught at the warning track in a deep ballpark. Then they can throw that out. They can care more about what the guy's actually doing with the ball. It takes luck out of it.
518 texting in, I'm with you, Carmen. I just went to the can. Should I let you know my exit velocity? That's my guy. That's somebody who's just gonna sit on his lawn like me and say no.
That's disgusting, by the way.
It is a little bit aggressive, and I maybe shouldn't have read that on the air, but I think we can all be adults here and have a little bathroom humor every now and then. I mean, here are things that I do know that has nothing to do with anything you're talking about. The Cubs are raising a banner tomorrow,
yep,
which has never happened in the history of the world, as far as I can tell. I mean, I don't know what they did in 1908, but I don't think there was a banner raised at Wegman Park. So this is a banner being raised. Rhino, Billy Williams, Fergie Jenkins, they're going to raise the banner.
It's the first World Series banner being raised at Wrigley Field. You can put it that way.
That's
in the history of the world.
Right. Cubs are telling people to get there tomorrow by 6:15. So these festivities are going to start early. Don't think they're all going to start at 7. I can also tell you that members of the Ricketts family are going to be throwing out the first pitch. I would think that perhaps, no disrespect to the Ricketts family.
Okay, now I'm going to get a ticket.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a huge selling point, but congratulations to Tom, and thank you so much for doing everything that you did. Laura as well, and Todd, and I forget, who's the other Ricketts? I forget his name. It's my bad. The hats are going to have celebratory, thank you, gold in them.
Oh, yeah, and I think on the jerseys, too.
Yeah.
The Royals did that, though.
Because that's what you do when you're the world champions. And then Wednesday night, you get the ring night. So they're milking this for everything it's worth, which I don't blame them. I'd do the same. 20 Cub fans are going to be giving out the rings to players. And these are the most diehard fans with, like, special stories. There's somebody that's going to be out there that's dealing with spina bifida. I mean, all sorts of stuff. So that's super cool on Wednesday night. And we got the new park at Wrigley's opening up, Hogue. You can, you know, go to Wrigley and watch movies. You can go. There's going to be a farmer's market. You can go ice skating, but what you might actually be excited about is there's a new gate where you go through the parks. It's called Gate H, the West Gate. So it's going to be easier to get in and out of the ballpark because instead of having the left field corner Waveland gate and home plate and right field, now you're adding in one more gate, which in theory there should be a lot less congestion getting into Wrigley Field, which is a win. So good job, Cubs.
That is probably my least favorite part of Wrigley Field.
Getting in and out?
Not so much in, but the herd of people trying to get out of the ballpark at
That's
the end
true.
Of the game. It's like being stuck on the Kennedy in rush hour.
Right, you have to have good strategy there, which is you walk if you're by home plate, you walk in the seats all the way to the corner. You don't go on the concourse. You go in the seats,
yep.
Walk to the corner, and go out.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You don't have to do it anymore. You can go out the West Gate now.
Now it's going to be a lot easier to get out of the park on the left field side because you have home plate, the West Gate, and the left field corner. Right field corner, that's where you're going to be. Your gridlock will be, again. You listen to this show, we just make your life better.
Not to rain on the Cubs championship night.
You're about to talk about just...
Literally rain, maybe.
Really?
Tomorrow, a high of 71. This is according to the Weather Channel app right now. Cloudy skies during the morning hours, followed by thunderstorms in the afternoon. A few storms may be severe. Chance of rain, 80%. Then going in the evening, scattered thunderstorms before midnight. A few storms may be severe. Chance of rain, 50%. So it could be dicey tomorrow night.
Who's going to cry tomorrow? 312-981-7200. Were you at the banner raising in 06?
I was.
Did you cry? A little bit? One tear?
I don't remember. I do know that is one of the biggest... the only time I've ever regretted leaving a game early.
In 06?
Similar night. The banner went up, championship, World Series, dicey night weather-wise, storms came in, there was a long rain delay.
You go home.
Long enough that it was like, all right, and yeah, I forget what was going on. Like, I think I was still in college, so I had to go back to Madison the next day, I think. And I was like...
You go to a lot of sporting events. It's impressive.
Why?
It was
a ring night for the White Sox winning the World Series.
Yeah, but
you go.
Right, but you go.
We had tickets, too. We had our season tickets.
I mean, I remember vending. You were at the blackout game. You've been going to games your whole life. You really should thank your dad. Do you thank your dad enough?
I do.
Okay, good.
He knows that.
Okay.
But anyway, we left during the rain delay. Got home. Jim told me he hit a walk-off home run.
Yeah. Game one of the year. No biggie.
Yeah, but it was game one post-World Series.
Okay. I get it.
And I think it was the Sunday night opener, so it was the equivalent of the Cubs-Cardinals game last week, but in Chicago, not on the road.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that one hurt. Hey, that one hurt.
Hey, keeping you up to date on the Masters, Sergio Garcia, one shot back of Justin Rose, who's 8 under. They're through 14. Are they paired together? They must be. That's how that works.
They are.
So Rose and Garcia... Rose up one shot, playing together through 14. We got 4 holes to go. Keep you up to date, because I don't think if you're in your car, you're not listening to the Masters. We will be your Masters radio. Can you do play-by-play?
For golf?
Well,
never tried that before in my life.
I think you can do it. You're that talented.
You know what was surprisingly...
You do great sideline for Northwestern. You can do this.
Thank you. You know what's surprisingly entertaining? It was golf on the radio during the Ryder Cup.
Rough.
I mean, doesn't it sound... It sounds like it's how in the world would you do that? But when I was walking around the course during the Ryder Cup in 2012, they gave you like these little earpieces so you could hear what was going on the rest of the course because you're obviously only seeing one hole.
Right.
It was very, very helpful.
Okay. They do that, by the way, at the U.S. Open, which is coming up fairly soon.
Now, I don't know if I'm driving around in my car on a Sunday afternoon if I want to be here listening to
golf
on the radio. I'd rather listen to Hogue and Carm.
That's what I'm talking about.
Talk about baseball and then sort of give you the updates as it's happening.
Right. That's what we're doing for you. Hey, Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Keep you up to date on the Masters and...
I got a problem with the Illini. We got to do that.
Yep. Here we go with Illinois losing a top 100 recruit, one of the best recruits they've had in years. And Adam's got some breakdown on what Illinois is doing and what they're not doing. 720 WGN.
Back here on the beat, 720 WGN, Adam Hogue and Mark Carmen here with you till 6 o'clock. All right, so it's a bad week for Illinois basketball. Carm, don't know if you saw this, but the big news earlier in the week, Jeremiah Tillman, the big, you know, five-star big man from East St. Louis, reopened his...
The best recruit the line I've had in over a decade.
Now, he was signed, had signed his national letter of intent, but usually when you hire a new coach, you fire a guy, you hire a new guy. If the player asks to be let out of his national letter of intent, you let him. Illinois was hopeful without hiring Brad Underwood, you'd be able to keep Tillman. Well, not only did they lose Tillman, well, I shouldn't say they lost him because it's still possible that they decide to stay with Illinois. But
he gone.
You ask out of your letter of intent, you're probably gone. And yesterday we find out that Belleville East guard Javon Pickett, another big recruit, also asked out. So you just lost two players that were going to come in right away next year and probably help you.
John Gross also got hired this week, by the way, as the head coach of the Akron Zips. I don't know if they'll go there, but didn't take long for him to get work. Not saying that I'm a huge John Gross guy, by the way, but just it is worth noting that...
Yeah, but he came from Ohio. He's going back to Akron. Yeah.
I get it, but it's still... If
he belongs in the MAC. He's fine in the MAC, not the Big Ten.
Okay, but...
They didn't make the tournament the last 4 years.
I get it. But he did just get another job fairly easily, which I was surprised.
All right, so that gets to expectations. Here, real quick, if you're someone on Twitter, and this goes for any school, this isn't about Illinois, but if you're, no, I shouldn't say on Twitter, if you're a grown man or woman, whatever, who is criticizing an 18-year-old for the decision, for lifelong decisions they're making.
Okay, now we're going there. I'm with you 100%.
Well, this is just real quick on that, because that's ridiculous. I mean, Tillman decommits, everyone goes bonkers, they're tweeting at this kid. You know, just think about the pressure these guys are under. And do I think does it smell fishy? Sure. It smells a little fishy. But you know what? He's getting pulled in a lot of different directions. He's an 18-year-old kid. You give him a break.
Yeah,
you get over it.
Most times when you're somebody that talented, you're going to the school because of the head coach, because you feel a connection, because you feel comfortable. Certain guys, they want to go play, like, you know, we can bring a local, like Nathan Taphorn. He committed to Northwestern under Bill Carmody.
Yeah.
Carmody left. He stayed with Chris Collins because he wanted to go to Northwestern, and Chris and them came.
But it took some convincing.
It did. But he, you know, but that guy was mostly in for the school, wanted to play at Northwestern, wanted to play in the Big Ten. Somebody who's a top 100 recruiter can go anywhere. They're going to go with a coach where they feel like they're going to be taken care of and get featured and all that type of stuff.
But just in general, whenever this stuff happens, it's so ridiculous to start attacking an 18-year-old. If he wants to go to a different school, fine. You know, like, it's his decision. It's a huge decision in his life. And that's the decision he made, so respect it. More what I want to get into, though, and this happens, too, when we start talking about a coaching hire. I don't know, where would you rank Illini basketball, like in terms of programs?
In the top 50?
Okay. 50 is a number I can have a conversation about. When I start hearing Illinois, this happens a lot, Illinois fans, and by the way, I used to be an Illinois fan. Before I went to Wisconsin, I was a huge Illinois basketball fan. I remember sitting in my dorm room freshman year at Wisconsin, all alone, because obviously around a lot of Badger fans, yelling and screaming at the TV as Illinois lost to North Carolina in the national championship.
Okay, so you were on the D. Williams, Darren Williams, D. Brown team. Thank you.
And, well, look, but I have... I think, a pretty realistic look at what Illinois basketball is. When I start hearing fans say that they're a top 15 program, or even top 25, and that they should be able to pull in a huge, big-name coach, or pull all the five stars out of Chicago every year, it is ridiculous. let's go through the last 21 years of Illinois basketball.
Let's not.
And I can go longer. Don't you think 21 years is a pretty good sample size for a program?
Sure, let's boil it down.
That's two decades. We're going from the time Lon Kruger took over for Lou Henson. Okay, 21 years. Do you know how many times they went to the NCAA tournament in the last 21 years?
Eight times?
Oh, it's more than that.
15.
Eight would not be very good at all. It's 13, which is 62%.
Well, they're on a four-year drought right now, right?
Right. Well, but that gets back to expectations. I do think it's fair. Illinois is a good enough program that they should expect to go to the NCAA tournament.
I agree.
Every single year. Absolutely. That should be the expectation. It should probably be more than that, actually. So I'm on board with you there. Over 21 years, you've only made it 13. It's time to start looking at that, though, as while that's the expectation, you're not this great program. 62% of the time is not that great. Four Sweet 16s.
So hold on a second before we go even further. Are you, in your opinion, knowing that you would have lost what's going on right now, you're losing top 100 recruits, would you have kept Gross to get the players in or no?
No. It was time to make a change there. You can't miss the tournament 4 years in a row.
So you have an incredible class, the best class that you've had, and he's brought him in. I think that's tough, man.
It is tough. I think you go the route that they did. They made the coaching change with the hopes that they could keep him.
Okay.
But they didn't. But what I'm saying here is, look, I hear this a lot too, probably because I went to Wisconsin. But I hear from a lot of Illini fans saying, why can't we be Wisconsin? And it seems like off the cuff, like a realistic question. Like, why can't they? But these two programs aren't even in the same stratosphere. You really break this down. The same 21-year period that I just went over with Illinois.
Oh, Wisconsin's been crushing.
Wisconsin's been to 20 out of 21. 19 in a row. 10 Sweet 16s compared to 4 for Illinois. 10 Sweet 16s compared to 4. They've been to 4 in the last 4 years. Wisconsin has. 3 Final Fours. Compared to 1 for Illinois.
Yeah, but I get like how an Illini fan would look at Wisconsin and Madison, and why can't Champaign? We're supposed to be getting
right, but there's let's start with the city.
Like, yeah, Madison's way better than Champaign.
Look,
I agree.
I hate to break it down. Champaign's not a great place.
No, it's not. But like, if I'm a basketball player, I'm not. I don't really know the difference between Madison and Champaign, do I?
But we got to stop looking at Champaign just because it's in the same state. As it gives you some kind of pipeline to Chicago. Guess what? Wisconsin's recruited Illinois just as good as Illinois has.
And they're equidistant.
Frank Kaminsky, Ethan Happ just being the last two.
Listen, Bo Ryan was phenomenal.
And just real quick, before I know we got to take a break, let's just go ahead and double 21 years to 42.
Okay.
Because Illinois will go, oh, well, the Lou Henson era, I mean, we have this great history. It's actually slightly worse. They only made 12 NCAA tournaments under Lou Henson, 21 years.
So what you're doing right now for Illini Nation is boiling it down and saying that your school is vastly overrated and be happy if you make the tournament. That's what I'm hearing.
What I'm saying, what I'm doing is giving a little bit of a reality check to those who look at Illinois like it's a way better program than it actually is, because it is not. It's a pretty solid program in a very good basketball area, but this idea that Illinois deserves a huge coach and all these huge top five or five-star recruits because of its location and the fact that it's in Illinois, it doesn't matter. You think Kentucky cares? You think Duke cares? They just come in and swoop in and take all these guys. Because they're better program, they're not even close. They're so. But my point here is actually that a school like Wisconsin has gone way past Illinois, way past them, and that's just one example.
It's been an ugly tenure recently for the Illini. Sergio Garcia, by the way, is back on top of the Masters 9-under. How did he just do that? What just happened? These Eagle 15.
I don't know.
We're going
to figure
that
out during the break.
But, yeah. So
city, facilities, academics.
Coach.
I mean, but if you're a kid who wants to go play basketball somewhere, there's no reason why Illinois should be any – if you're a kid here in Chicago, there's no reason Illinois should be any higher in your list than any of these other schools. That's the point I'm making. And you're not – you're just not that good. Hashtag, you're just not that good of a program. I'm sorry.
Hashtag go Cats. Let's go. Final Four next year. 720 WGN. They're on 17.
Why am I working Master Sunday again?
Justin Rose, not related to Derrick Rose, 10 under after birdieing 16. Sergio Garcia had about a, I don't know what just fell. I think that was the remote.
What was that?
I think it was the remote. Sergio Garcia had about a 5-foot putt for birdie, and he missed it. So he's down a stroke at 9 under as they both are teeing off on 17. This is your Masters Sunday home.
Don't you want Sergio just to get over this?
I do now.
I mean, that
I do.
That putt, the birdie putt he just missed on 16 was so Sergio.
Sergio Garcia has never won a major.
Just he's got to get one. Come on, Serge. Team Sergio.
It's the beauty of the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. Can we get some music, Dan? Can I get some Masters music? Ooh. Just get some flavor going on here. To come out to Augusta, Georgia for the pimento sandwiches. You know about that, right?
Yeah, I know. $1.50.
$1.50 cheese sandwich. Beautiful.
It doesn't sound good, but everyone says they're good.
I think they're probably delicious. So you're just sitting out there. Amen corner. What do they call that? That creek? So many beautiful traditions at the Masters. Have you been there, Adam?
No, I'd love to go.
Right now, Teddy Greenstein of the Chicago Tribune is standing there in the cool breeze watching Justin Rhodes. Rose.
Are you saying Rhodes or
yeah,
Rose?
Yeah, I keep saying Rhodes. I don't know why, because it's like a road. It's like a Rhodes that winds all the way to the beautiful conclusion at a country club that didn't allow women until about 2 years ago when they were shamed and Condoleezza Rice was made a member so they could kill two birds with one stone.
I mean, this just took a total turn. I mean, a fair turn.
There's never been
a
place.
Big turn. We went from pimento cheese sandwiches to Condoleezza Rice.
Where white men can sit in a clubhouse and celebrate being white men. Go out on the golf course with a white tee and a white golf ball.
Oh, I just thought of a guy who is actually luckier than Jordan Spieth's caddy.
Oh, yeah?
Luck is the right word.
Who would that be?
So, the way the cut worked, Jason Day had to... He was the first guy to tee off yesterday after the cut, and he was all by himself, right?
Okay.
So, a member of the club went out there and played with him.
Oh, wow.
He was a pace guy. He was basically there to just hold the pace, because otherwise, they were saying Jason Day would have finished in like 3 hours.
Oh,
he was playing by himself.
I was like, why wouldn't he know how to keep the pace? I get it. He would have gone too fast.
Yeah.
So, let's see. I think they're both in the fairway here on 17.
Nope.
That's not accurate?
No, Justin Rhodes.
Justin Rhodes slash Rose? Derrick Rose?
He's just in the first cut. He's fine. But Sergio outdrove him and is right in the middle of the fairway.
Okay. So, this is a huge... We got a par four here? Par 4, 17?
This is a par 4. Last two holes are par 4s.
Okay. What's the protocol here, Dan? Are we allowed to give play-by-play?
Are we ever?
I would say no.
Yeah, it's not even a...
Can you call Todd Manley, please?
It's not Todd Manley's decision.
Whose decision is it?
The Masters in CBS.
Oh, okay. But we can, like, give updates as to what's going on
and
where they're at? Okay.
Because this is a news station.
Okay. I don't know the rules.
You can't do golf play-by-play anyway. Who are
Why
you
not?
Kidding?
No one else is doing golf play-by-play. Yeah, you're right, I can't.
Yeah, Jim Nance is not doing golf play-by-play.
Are you a big Jim Nance guy?
Yeah.
Thank you. He's great. He's professional.
I think he's great. I don't like tune in for Jim Nance, though.
Me neither.
Like, and I'm a guy who will tune in to things just for the announcer. Like,
who would you tune in for? Bob Uecker.
Well, yeah, all due respect to Pat Hughes. Like, driving in today, they're playing the Brewers.
Going
uke. I live in the North Burbs. Uke.
Well, right.
620 comes in perfectly for a nice Cubs Brewer afternoon.
Uke's incredible. Thinking about who else I really would make a Vin.
Yeah. Oh, so, and we talked about this in the past.
Dave Bennett, Northwestern.
MLB.
I'm not even kidding.
MLB TV. I would basically, when the Cubs and Sox are over, as long as the Dodgers were on the West Coast, which they usually are, except when they're on the road on the East Coast, or here in Chicago, like later tonight, I would turn on the Dodgers. I've watched more Dodger baseball the last 5 years than any other team besides the Cubs and White Sox.
Connor McKnight, who used to do this show, would go to sleep to Vin Scully, for real. He'd have like scotch and go to sleep to Vin Scully.
Yeah,
which is weird, but.
Which
he
for a
that.
Single man like himself is, I mean, it's slightly disturbing.
But I respect
it's
it.
A little worrisome.
Hey, as we keep you up to date, they're both staring at their golf balls.
is that how you're? This is reason number one why you could not do golf play by play, because you just get so frustrated how slow it is.
Just let's go.
And they're. Just staring at their golf balls.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should give Jim Nantz more credit. I mean, I don't know what he's talking about right now, but it's better than what I just said.
Well, if you ever watch golf, there's like 20 announcers, and
that's
they all
true.
Just go like bounce back and forth.
Right, but at this point, we got two golfers left, and you have no option other than to fill the time as they think about the biggest shot of their life.
You just said during the break, now you go, this is a direct quote. Now this is exciting.
It is exciting. It just takes a while. I think Rose just put his shot a little bit short. That's what I just saw.
Yeah, I think he went in the bunker.
So Rose is in the bunker. Yep, he's in the bunker. Ooh, he's in the bunker. Can he get up and down?
Jim Nantz is so much better at this than you are.
Well, what's very key when you get in the bunker is to get out of the bunker, and then you have to make your putt. That would be up and down. So, but we have now. Who's the other guy? Sergio Garcia? Yeah. I'm kidding. Sergio's right in the middle of the fairway. He's got a beautiful...
Is he staring at his golf ball?
He's looking at his ball, yes. He has an incredible... what do they call that? A very good lie? It's a good lie?
Yeah, that's how it usually is in the middle of the fairway.
Right. And so what happens then is that he tries to put the ball onto the green. And am I allowed to now say what happened?
Well, all you're doing right now is explaining the game of golf, which most people understand.
Right.
A lot better than you understand OPS Plus.
I didn't mean to dumb it down, but the bottom line of all this, you should read there for the Cubs.
This is how the Cubs playoffs were, by the way. When we would go on the air and the game would go to 16 innings or whatever it is.
Well, the point is that Rose is on... Rose is in the bunker and Garcia is on the green and he's one shot down. So we could have a playoff, which means that I should sprint home when the show ends in 15 minutes and Brian Noonan comes home and watch it, right?
If it's playoff, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Should we go down over to the GOAT to just...
Yes.
Okay.
Let's do it. If it goes to the playoff.
I got dinner with Papa Fred out in the burbs at 7, but I could like...
Yeah,
20 minutes, I got you. I'll go. I'm in for a 20-minute at the GOAT for Masters coverage.
Do you remember that night where we which playoff game was it that went like way late? It was like it went to like 1 a.m. or something.
I just remember Game 4 in San Francisco being so miserable and thinking they were going to blow the series and looking at you and wanting
all I know is we were on the air for like 3 hours while the game was going on, and Andy was like holding it together. Andy Mazur was in there with us. He's holding it together.
I wasn't.
He's being the professional. And Carr was just like a nervous wreck. I wish there was a camera on him. He could have watched him the whole time. And then he would just randomly make noises because he couldn't do play-by-play. It's like, ah!
Hey, it was the playoffs. I'm not going to...
I don't blame you. Golf play-by-play is bringing me back to that night.
That was so fun.
And there was at least three times where I think you could have been sued.
No. You want to do that coming back here?
Am I supposed to do this right now?
No, you can do it coming on back.
We'll
all right.
Talk about our guy, Opie.
We'll talk about Opie coming back here. We'll keep you up to date on the Masters. Rose is in the bunker. Garcia's on the fairway. Rose is 10 under. The remote control just fell again, and Garcia's on the green. All right, 720 WGN. Rose got up. Now he's trying to get down. About a, I don't know, call that an 8-foot putt?
That's what I'm doing to this song right now.
And Garcia had a putt for birdie, which he did not make.
He has left two birdie putts short, which even at my level of golf, I am told you're not supposed to do that.
That's not good, but he will be the benefactor of Rose missing his par putt, so he is now back to 9-under. And if Garcia can make his putt, he will also be 9-under, and we will be going to 18. And Adam Hoge has a smile on his face.
Let's do it!
Your playoff is right there for you, pal.
Hey, can we talk about the Bulls real quick, though, before we get out of here?
Yes, I'm very excited for the Bulls being in the playoffs, even though...
How did they lose to Brooklyn yesterday?
They lost because Dwayne Wade was not very good.
Because Dwayne Wade came back. Why are they better without Dwayne Wade?
I don't think they're better without Dwayne Wade, although the numbers do show you that. You know why they're better without Dwayne Wade, or why they have played better without Dwayne Wade when he was gone? It's because Rajon Rondo has been playing starting level point guard good Rajon Rondo play. He's been phenomenal.
He really hasn't been that bad overall this year.
No, he's been good. Overall, he's been one of their better players. So
the Bulls are frustrating.
The Bulls are frustrating.
Do you want them to make the playoffs?
I 100% want them to make the playoffs.
Why?
Because
they're going to get crushed by Cleveland.
Well, okay. They most likely will get crushed by Cleveland. I am an NBA fan. Having LeBron James in the city for a couple of games during the playoffs entertains me. I like watching it. I think they can get a game off Cleveland. They swept the Cavs in the regular season. Not that that matters. But I'd rather... I'm willing to watch that series. And they're not... It's... They've got a less than 1% chance of getting in the top three. So who cares if they're drafting 15th or 17th?
What if they get to, like, number 8?
You either got to get in the top three or you're in your spot. That's
oh,
how,
really? I didn't
yeah,
even know that.
Yeah, okay. So that's how it works.
Is that
so,
how it's always been?
Yeah. So they could be, if they do get lucky in their ping pong ball, this is what happens.
So the lottery is really only for the top three picks?
You have, they spin the balls around.
Yeah.
And
by the way, on the list of things I will never watch, well, okay. The NBA lottery night.
The Bulls had an 0.8 of a percent chance to get in the top three when they got Derrick Rose. And yep. It happened. Kind of wonder how that happened, but it happened.
I remember I was interning for you when that happened.
So it could happen. There is a chance. But if you believe in
math, there's a much better chance that that happens than them beating Cleveland.
Probably so, yes. But it's such a minuscule chance that just get in the playoffs and let me see if you guys can entertain me and do something. Maybe Nico.
They entertained you all year?
They've moderately entertained me at times.
Nah.
Listen, you've got Jimmy playing great basketball. Rondo sprained his wrist, so that's not great. And listen, for anybody who's like sitting there like going, Rondo sucks in their car right now. Listen, Rajon Rondo is a very credible backup point guard in the NBA right now. He's going to have a job next season. Maybe it'll be with the Bulls. I don't know. It's a $3 million buyout. I'm not 100% certain they're going to say goodbye to Rondo. They most likely will, but they might not. And you get to see these guys play in the playoffs. Nico, what do you got, buddy? Let's put you under the bright lights of a playoff. I wouldn't mind seeing it. He's going to get paid, too. Somebody's going to overpay.
Well, I said that 2 weeks ago, and you chastised me.
Yeah, I was wrong. I think I was wrong. Guys, I mean, I keep on... I know I've heard a lot of people say that Nico's going to get paid this week. Listening to NBA podcasts and stuff, people are like, Nico's going to get paid. Really? Nico's going to get paid?
Guys get paid, man.
I still have...
Especially in the NBA. You have bums getting max contracts.
So...
It's like, what? How's this happening? If I was LeBron, I'd be so mad.
Well, he's not exactly doing poorly.
I understand, but it's like LeBron should not be making the same as like who has a max? Is like Hassan Whiteside have a max contract?
Yeah, he does.
Okay, so Hassan Whiteside's making the same as LeBron?
Well, not exactly, because LeBron's signing like weird 1 year deals with options, and he's maximizing his money, so it's not identical, but yeah, remotely. But all that money is. Listen, it's what they make off the court. Michael Jordan signed an 8-year, $28 million contract in 1988.
Wait, what was it again? Say it again.
8 years, $28
million. Wow.
Which took him through the entire prime of his career. And then he got huge payments the final 3 years of the title where they're paying $30 million a year. But it didn't matter regardless. He's making $100 million-plus a year from Brand Jordan and Nike and everything else.
So you want them to make the playoffs?
I want them to make the playoffs.
By the way, Sacramento, there's no chance that they fall to the top.
No.
The bottom 10.
No.
But so that's too bad. So that becomes a second-round pick? Correct?
Right.
So the Bulls will have an extra second?
Right.
Cool.
Great, yeah. But the point, well, it's not the point, but what I am excited about in the playoffs, too, Russell Westbrook is going up against James Harden in the first round in the Western Conference.
See, I'm in for that.
That's a great series. You got the MVP versus the MVP. I think Harden's going to win it, but Westbrook's going to set the record. Hang on a second. Let's see if he did it today. He's going to set the record for most triple-doubles of all time.
LeBron's the MVP. He's not going to win it, but he should be.
I would agree with you there.
He's doing things that haven't been done before, even in LeBron James's career.
Russell Westbrook today, 32 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists. With 7:43 to go in the fourth. So I would assume he's going to get one more assist.
Here's how I would rank the MVPs.
Okay.
LeBron, Harden, Westbrook. And a few weeks ago, before I like really done work on this, the idea of Westbrook averaging a triple-double is very impressive. And you go, wow, Oscar Robertson. He should be the MVP. But his efficiency is not that good.
It's not.
And if I'm going to sit here an hour ago and talk about baseball and all these advanced stats saying who's really the better player, then I can't come back with you with the NBA and make any kind of argument that Westbrook should be the MVP over Harden.
Not a good one. No.
No. I would be hypocritical. Harden's been the way more efficient player and not turning the ball over as much, and he's on a better team. And he doesn't have a good team.
That's the biggest thing. Like they're
rough. You add all that together, there's no argument to have Westbrook be the MVP over Harden. And then I would still say LeBron's better.
Cavs lost today 126-125 to Atlanta. LeBron James in 47 minutes was 11 of 21, 32 points, 10 assists, 16 rebounds.
You know who wasn't the MVP on their basketball team this morning?
Who's that?
Me. I must have shot like 2 for 15 today.
Well, then we were on opposite ends of the spectrum because I took on Sam in the second round of the club tournament.
Okay. Sam and won?
Sam went down 6-4, 6-3. Thank you very much. We don't have another break here, do we, Dan? No. So, Brian Noonan, if you're in the hallway and you want to talk to us, feel free to come in.
I did, however, play great defense, rebound the hell out of the basketball because I basically abandoned my shot very early on. And just did all the little things.
Well, good.
You got to make life choices sometimes.
Back to the Masters on that note, because that's where you're at. Like your best.
By the way, nothing has happened since the last time we mentioned the Masters.
What has happened?
Oh, I know they have. They teed off.
They've teed off on 18. Both 9-under, Justin Rose and Sergio Garcia. Maybe Noonan's watching the Masters. That's not why he's talking.
I would rather watch the Masters right now than talk to us.
Seems kind of rude.
If you had to make that split-second decision with the Masters on 18 right now, do I sit in the green room and watch the Masters, or do I talk to Adam Hogan, Mark Carman?
I mean, I'd come to talk to Hogan, Carman.